Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Nothing but a gangster party. Welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, and your co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, the two most hated guests out there on radio and land. Anyways, last week we had some good fights. Lucas Matisse, the machine, La Machina. You know, I think the name fits. This guy's improved. He's improved, and he keeps improving every time. You know, last week on the radio show, I said, "Okay, Mike Dallas, should we be jumping up and down because he had stopped Mike Dallas in the first round?" Well, beating Lamont Peterson, it really depended on what Lamont Peterson decided to come out. Obviously, the first round decided to be the cutie Lamont Peterson box move. Not be there to be hit. But eventually, when he got caught, when he got clipped, and me and Gabriel were talking about this, he never recovered from it. And he went instantly to go to his fighting mode, because that's the way he has survived in the past. He's, you know, survived by fighting back, landing big shots, making the guy retreat so that it gives him some time to breathe. This time around, though, he had a guy that really didn't care if he was going to get hit back, because he knew his shots were going to be way harder and way, way stronger. Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. We got a really stacked show for everybody tonight. 347-215-7598. Make sure you download the iPhone app and the Android app. You can get it at your Google Store and you can get it at your Apple Store, so that you can tune in live. Gabriel, what were your thoughts about that? What did you think about Lucas Matisse? Where does he go from here?
Anywhere he wants with power like that. You know, I think Lamont had ideas. He thought he was going to come out and box. He thought he was going to, you know, kind of shuffle the deck a little bit. And he's always been a little bit that kind of guy. He has that ability. But, you know, in him and talking to guys that watched him in the gym and watched him develop over the years, he's got a lot of dog in him. He just wants to get it done, and he's got that nice guy exterior. But really, it's all about getting in there and just out fighting the other guy. So I think the main thing. Sorry, it seems like 5 o'clock, and I get barraged. With Matisse, though, you know, here's the thing. Like you were saying, you know, it came down to Lamont Peterson. What was he going to do? What did he decide to do? I think it came down to, you know, Matisse landing and really the simple question: could Lamont take his power? Could he land anything with a plume that would make Matisse think twice? And you know, the answer to both of those was well, you know, no and no. And basically, I think Matisse was the one that made Lamont Peterson decide how the fight was going to go. Once he landed, there was a right hand. He landed like a 1-2 in the last like 30 seconds, the last right at the bell of the first round. But the last 30 seconds, you could see Matisse kind of corralling Peterson and kind of getting him in his sights. And then he landed a good solid 1-2, and Lamont walked slowly back to his corner. And then in the second round, before that knockdown, there was a hard right hand that landed in the face of Lamont. He kind of walked right into it, and they moved around like he wasn't hurt. And a few seconds later, he lays on the ropes. Matisse comes in, lands that right to the body, and then he moves to his right, Peterson does, and gets caught with that left hook, and down he goes. But he got clipped just barely on top of the head. I think he never really quite recovered. Something happened with that 1-2 at the end of the round, and he just capitalized later on with that other right hand. I mean, it was just brutal efficiency by Matisse. He's gotten better at boxing and slowly kind of disguising what he's doing, and just relentless power and pressure.
You know,
I think he's going to be a problem for just about anybody in the division. But that said, you know, Peterson's been knocked down before several times. So he's always gotten up to win, and this was game-changing power. But, you know, I was very impressed. But But still, you have to. You do have to point that out. But
you have to be reserved of how impressed you. You know, see, here's my thing. And Lucas Matisse, like I said, he keeps improving. He keeps getting better. This is the one thing that I've noticed, because you know we could say he's improving, but we have to point out what has been. What's the improvement there? The improvement to me is how he places his punches and where he's at to place them. Where in the past, it was more to me a guy that it was a running engine, you know, where you revved it up and you just keep revving it up for no apparent reason. This time, this guy's engine's working properly. There's gears, and those gears are working. And when you got a puncher like that, that can now kind of understand where he needs to pick up the gear, where he needs to shift. So in order for those punches to go to that next level, you start seeing a guy that's now even more dangerous. He was dangerous before because of the power, but now he's even more dangerous because he's learning how to use that power, how to utilize it, how to, you know, put it on his opponent. And, you know, even though it was Lamont Peterson, and I said it, you had to really, it really depended on what Lamont Peterson came out. Here's the thing, though. Lucas Matisse could have let that slip away. Could have been discouraged off of that first round and just started just throwing wild punches rather than being, to me, it was a bit conservative. And that kind of told me that he was looking for the moment to strike. He was, you know, keeping the eye on the prize. And, you know, when he decided to open up the present, hey, we were the ones that got the Christmas gift.
Yeah, I just think with a puncher like that, everybody gets excited. And rightly so. You know, people will always argue, was Tito overrated? Was he over, you know, was he properly matched? That sort of thing. And they'll pick over Matisse too. But, you know, just enjoy it. Game-changing power like that is pretty rare. For him to really clip Lamont the way he did, and for Lamont really never to quite recover from being hit with those shots, and then just to be finished off like that in the third round, that's something to be excited about. People always look at the guy that's going to beat Floyd Mayweather as somebody that's going to be equal to him in terms of skill. They're always looking at that. Well, he's not skilled enough to beat Floyd. It isn't going to be that guy. It's going to be a guy that has one or two attributes that are extraordinary, that can overcome, you know, it's going to be a will over skill situation. Maybe Matisse is that guy, a guy that can, it's kind of like, and it'll bother you to the day I die, if Trinidad and Hopkins had happened the day it was supposed to, and Tito's training camp, which was apparently a good one, you know, happened to everything go according to plan and the fight happened on that day.
I'm with you on that so much.
You know,
I
it
mean,
really bothers me.
It does.
Because sometimes will can punch through skill, and Jorge Castro, John David Jackson, and always go back to that fight. It happens. And so, you know, Matisse, I don't know, but he's, you know, he's 140. Apparently he blows up pretty big, though, after, you know, for fight night. So, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think about that matchup?
You know what? I can tell you right now, I would like it a lot better. You're talking about if they would match him up with Floyd Mayweather, right? I would definitely go for it. I'm going to tell you why. Devon Alexander, I'm sorry. It just doesn't get my blood going. It doesn't. I have no interest to it. Maybe I should. He was on the undercard. But, you know, there's nothing there really that's going to make me go, man, I'm going to, you know, throw some carne asada on the grill, have some chicken prepared ready, have, you know, my ice chest filled up with beer and be excited. I just can't get into it. I'm going to watch it. But
yeah.
I just can't get excited. With Lucas Matisse, we want that. The imagination is there. Look, with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, you know, here was the draw of it. He was a rugged fighter, a guy that was that jumped up, made his case to get the Floyd Mayweather fight. Up to the lead up of the fight, he definitely looked like a heavy candidate to give Floyd a lot of problems. Lost the fight, though, before he even got in the ring. I think that, you know, we said this before. The win was, I got the fight, not really fighting in the ring. So, with Lucas Matisse, here's another guy that just seems to have that drive. But the drive is a little bit different because there's a punch with that drive. So, it's not one of those drives, well, I got to, you know, try to out-muscle him. I got to rug him up. I think the different of mind frame that Lucas Matisse is going to have is that he's walking in believing and knowing he's the puncher, that he can turn this fight around if he lands. Doesn't matter where he lands to, you know, on the top of the head, to the back of the neck, side of the ear, to the chin. Something's going to happen.
That's the danger that Pacquiao brought. People always had that argument, I thought, in the wrong way, that, well, Pacquiao's not as good a boxer as Floyd. I always categorized him as two different things. One was is the best boxer in the world, which Floyd, and the other one at one time was the best fighter in the world, and that was Pacquiao. And there's a distinction there. It's in the way they go about their business. And Pacquiao, while he was deficient, much like a Trinidad, much like a Terry Norris, or even a Julian Jackson, in the defense department, they made up for it with power and with the fearlessness and confidence that comes with having tremendous power. They also, you know, all three of those guys didn't have the greatest of chins, it would turn out. They also lost to, you know, tremendous, at least strong punchers and people that were great technicians. There's no shame in the people that they lost to. But I think Matisse has that kind of recklessness. Pacquiao certainly had that kind of reckless, speedy quality. Matisse doesn't have speed, but I don't know if you saw the video that I tweeted out just a little earlier. I put on my Facebook, too, of Matisse sparring with Sergio Martinez. Now, granted, it's sparring, so imagine Sergio's allowing things to happen for a reason, you know, laying on the ropes and such. But you can see how comfortable Matisse is in there with a middleweight. So it gives you some sort of sense how at a quality, speedy, you know, middleweight champion of the world, it gives you some sense of how he might deal with granted, it's a world of difference in terms of skills and style, but a bigger opponent, at least, at the elite level. I don't know. I want to see it. I'd watch. I mean, there's mystery there. There's mystery with power because you don't know what's going to happen, and that makes for a great fight.
Well, here's the thing is that I think the fight would juice up a little bit more with the Danny Garcia fight. Here's my thing, too, because a lot of fans were like, look at Danny Garcia. He looks petrified. You could tell by his face expression, he doesn't want anything to do with Lucas Matisse.
Doesn't he always kind of look like that, though?
Yeah,
he's always kind of wide-eyed, and yeah.
Oh, I didn't see any fear in the kid. To tell you the truth, I'm not going to be one to jump on and say that this is going to be an easy fight for Lucas. I mean, have we forgotten that Danny, he's got a right hand, and, you know, though that Lucas has been improving, he lost to Zab Judah, which we thought he won. But who was more convincing in that fight when either one of those guys had faced Zab Judah? I mean, I thought Danny was able to handle that speed again. He was able to land that right hand. This kid, you know, he's a proven warrior himself. This is not going to be an easy fight. I mean, Lucas Matisse and himself in his camp, they really got to go into this fight knowing there is some danger facing this young, undefeated, and really confident fighter right now, and who calls himself a champion. This is not a Lamont Peterson type of fight where Lamont doesn't know who he is. You know, he can't decide whether or not he's got to be the boxer or he's going to try to be an exciting fighter. Danny Garcia, he's got a right hand. Granted, though, that I even said this a while back when after we watched that Zab Judah, I said that, you know, Danny has become a little braver than the past. You know, when he fought Holt, he was boxing more. He was backing up. Ever since winning the title, ever since beating Amir Khan, he's become a little bit more daring in what he does. You know, if he misses a right hand, he's going to try to, you know, land it regardless if he's off balance. He's going to try to touch you with that right hand. I that's something that his father and his camper have to really just kind of fine-tune and get him back into boxing and just setting up the right hand, not looking to try to land the right hand, because you can't do that with a Lucas. Lucas then would, I would have to say, puts him asleep.
Well, I think the Judah fight showed that they can shuffle the deck a little bit too. That, you know, what was Zab talking about at the press conference? A left hook. That's all he kept thinking was that all this kid has is a left hook. The story of the fight was him landing that right hand. He took away his own left hook, kind of held it in reserve for later, and that was effective. Now, he kind of fell apart late, but I really feel that timing is everything. And you know, he needed a fight like that. Kendall Holt didn't give him that kind of fight. Instead, he kind of dominated a mid-level contender. But this is an ex-champion. This is and an ex-champion in his own hometown. It was a very inspired, very up Zab Judah. It was a very good Zab Judah that he faced. And, he was more decisive. Granted, you know, the end of the fight was a little shaky for him, but there was no question as to who won that fight. Whereas in the Matisse fight, we felt he won, but you could argue either way. That's a good point. So, I don't know. We'll see. You know, I think it's a good fight. I think Danny, like you're saying, I don't think there's any fear. We sat there and talked with him for about 20, 30 minutes at the fights in December, and his eyebrows are always kind of raised. He always kind of has this, like, surprised, kind of happy, wide-eyed way about him. He's like the counterbalance to his dad, who's a little more staid, you know, and a little more street-oriented, whereas Danny's kind of like the wide-eyed kid. I don't see any fear. I think he's
kind
excited.
Of soaking it all in. I mean, if you look at him, to me, he looks like he's just soaking it all in. He's enjoying himself. And, you know, there was a lot of great fights for Lucas. Here's one thing that I wanted to point out is that in so many ways, Broner, we're going to talk a little bit about Broner here on Leave the Ring, and then we're going to be calling in our guests. We're going to be passing some fight fans as well. Our phone lines are just filled up right now. People want to talk about Lucas Matisse and Lamont Peterson this past Saturday. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to download the app on your Android or your Apple. But going back to my point, is, you know, Adrian Broner, the problem, has basically kind of mimicked the career of Floyd. And here's one of note of what he's mimicked. Floyd Mayweather, when the welterweight division was stacked, Miguel Cotto, Margarito, Claudia, et cetera, the list goes down. Floyd retired. Broner skipped a division that's stacked with talent. Decided to take Paulie Malignaggi. And I literally see fans excited, you know, about this fight, where I'm just like, why are these same fans not pointing out that Broner jumped from a division that's so stacked and so rich with talent, they could make tons of money, but opt to go after Paulie Malignaggi, who's got, you know, pillows for fists. Don't get that. Don't understand that. And why is nobody pulling this card for doing something like that? You know, I'd like to see Broner jump back down. I'd like to see him just go down there. But I have a huge feeling if Lucas Matisse keeps winning, or Danny Garcia, they keep winning, I don't think we're ever going to see a Broner come to 140. I think he avoids that as much as he can, and he allows all the good 140 guys fight each other before he opts to go back down.
Yeah, I don't really understand it, other than they're just going to pick up a title and there you go. You know, that's what it's all about.
And you know what? Mosley had his fight on Saturday. Very surprised, but I'm not that surprised. I mean, you know, when I had a few people hitting me up, they were like, you know, what'd you think? And I said, well, hey, let's go back to when Mosley fought Antonio Margarito. He fought a guy very stationary. He fought a guy that wasn't that fast. And he looked great and fantastic. Beating Pablo Cesar Cano. Again, should we be overly excited? You know, Pablo's a regular Mexican fighter. He's very tough, very grit. But he was in there and he was getting caught. And Mosley looked great. But I'm not going to read too far into it. I tweeted during the fight. I said, you know, boxing is a business. I think we forget that boxing is a business. Now, Golden Boy, I had a few guys who were like, why is he even fighting? I mean, why would Golden Boy even think of putting this guy back into the ring? Remember this, people. I used to say that Shane Mosley was the janitor of boxing for Golden Boy. And I think that fits him really well for Golden Boy, because here's a guy that's going to come in and really, you know, kind of clean up the mess of what's kind of going on in a division right now. There's really nobody there in the welterweight division. I mean, can you really think, besides, you know, Floyd coming back down? I don't think Guerrero, even Berto's got his fight with Soto Carras. But for Broner, getting Paulie Malignaggi, what else is out there for him at 147? You know, he's not going to get Alexander. He's not going to get Kell Brook. He's basically going to stick around there if he wins that title. Well, the option for him, I would have to think, is going to be Shane Mosley. I hate to say it. I think that's the setup here. You know, I know that Doug Fisher had tweeted out from Ring Magazine it could possibly be Eric Morales, but you know, or to me, Shane is back in the business again for a title and big money.
Yeah, for big fights or big opportunities. He may also be fed to somebody like Amir Khan, whose style is all wrong for him, but we need him to face a puncher. And, you know, a faded welterweight champion and Shane Mosley, who could be jabbed to death from the outside.
See, I could see that if they're going to try to sell the Amir Khan and Floyd Mayweather fight. You know what I mean? If they want to try to convince casual fans that, you know, Amir gets in there and fights Shane Mosley at 147, and then they can kind of put that out, who looked better in beating, you know, Shane Mosley. But I really think that – I don't think Shane – I mean, we don't know what his thoughts are, but I really have it in my head right now. I really think that Shane is more or less looking for a title. Amir doesn't bring the title, and – would that be a pay-per-view? I think that, even though I don't think Broner versus Mosley is a pay-per-view fight, but it is very sellable to Broner's fans, and to his state, and to the casual fans. It's very sellable to them where they will pick it up. I would have to put money that this would be Broner's very first pay-per-view event if he faced Sugar Shane Mosley.
That's brutal.
I know. Fight fans, let's pass in some fight fans here on Leeds.
That is just brutal.
Let's get, as always, up first here on Leaving the Ring. CT, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
All right. I know I picked Peterson last week, and, you know, I thought he boxed pretty well the first round. Going into the second round, I thought he was trying to do the same thing. And I hear this and that from other people, but to me, what I saw is, like, this Matisse turned it up, you know?
He did.
And, yeah, I saw him cutting off the ring, landing his shots on the inside, not letting Lamont dictate, you know, his movement and lateral going side to side. And Matisse just turned it up and landed those hard shots. I give a lot of credit to Matisse. I don't think, you know, I heard from other people that Lamont was weight drained. He didn't look like himself. I just thought he boxed well the first round, and even if he did try to do what I wanted him to do, what I thought he was going to do, he still, I think, would have lost, because this guy just hits very hard. He's kind of like a Trinidad, not very muscular build or anything. He just has those heavy hands. He's just gifted with, you know, heavy punches.
And he knows how to get you on the end of his power, and it's compact, and it's technically sound for the most part. I know he throws those wide shots from the outside, but Steve pointed this out, and watching it again, I think it's pretty true that he kind of corrals his opponent by throwing kind of wider shots. It gives you a little bit of pause before you just exit out to the sides laterally. And it makes you kind of move in ways that you don't want to. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's a normal shot that just catches you. I think he's able to really change the trajectory of what he's doing fairly easily, which is a hell of a skill or an ability.
Yeah,
I don't know, whatever you categorize it. But, yeah, I really like what he was doing in there. Like you said, it's like a Trinidad-like power. It's a game changer, and that's a good thing. We need more of that.
Yeah, I like the way he set that up too. That left hook, he threw a right hand to the body, made Lamont shift his body to the right, and he timed that left hook perfectly. I mean, it might have landed a little bit above the temple, but that just proves his power. It was wide, winging shot, and it still connected, and it was a late reaction, but it still had power, and it landed. And that left hook, the second one, I was like, oh, my God. And I don't know if you guys want to look this up, you can barely see Broner on outside between the ropes, but you see his jaw drop as Peterson hits the canvas.
That's why he's like, damn, that's why I left 140.
Exactly.
That's why I never stopped at 140.
That's probably what he's saying. And
I got to pull that up now just to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I barely caught, you know, I see it barely between the ropes, but you can barely see it. But with Garcia, I see it a 50-50 fight. I mean, I think Garcia brings a lot to the table. He has great timing. He has boxing ability himself. He has punching power. He's very strong for a 140-pounder. I think either guy can hurt each other with punches. I think it's a very interesting fight, but I think Garcia definitely does have to box smart in this fight. You know, he definitely has to watch out because I think Matisse has that type of power, just like Melanagi was saying. I think he definitely has that Julian Jackson type power. That one shot, because he's knocked down a whole bunch of fighters. I mean, that has to tell you something, regardless of the resume of who they are. He has a lot of punching power.
Really quick, the Danny Garcia that fought Kendall Holt, I believe, would have lost to Lucas Matisse. You know, there was a kid, he was a kid at that time facing Kendall Holt. And now, the Danny that I see now, that's why I believe that this is a much more of a match than a lot of people are really wanting to believe in. You got a very confident guy. You know, that's the thing is that when you get two confident fighters, you got a match there. You know, where Danny in the beginning, he didn't know who he was. You know, he had to discover what kind of a fighter he was. He had to find that hunger point. And once he found it and he liked, here's the one thing that you have some fighters that have a hunger to become a champion. And then when they become a champion, the hunger just kind of goes away. They're fulfilled. But this was a kid that became a champion and liked being a champion. So there's a different hunger there. He wants to stay a champion. That's why I say this is such a really good matchup. It's not going to be a really steamroll for Lucas Matisse. I'd be very surprised if it is. But it, like I said, it's all about timing and where to place those punches. And that's going to be Danny Garcia and his team to understand and make Lucas Matisse be a little bit more hesitant on, or make mistakes. Let me take that back. Make mistakes, because you're right. Mm-hmm. With Lamont Peterson, he turned it up. He cut that ring. He knew that this guy was trying to outbox him, and he said, "No way, it's not gonna happen." So I'm gonna step in there and put a little bit more pressure. With Danny Garcia, to me, he's got to box smart, but at the same time, I think he has the right hand to keep Lucas maybe a bit humble. But with me, the eyes with Lucas Matisse tells me, man, there's no fear. He really believes in that power. So I think he's going to try to just go for it and see what he can do, because he knows that he's got that power and he could turn the fight around. But he's got a kid, too, that believes in his power as well. That's what I think, that this is the best 140 fight to me right now that should happen, needs to happen, and a lot of us need to look forward to.
Yeah, if I could just make one more point. The thing that I learned about Danny Garcia as well, you know, if they fight, Danny knows how to deal with adversity, you know, dealing with fast punches and getting hit for those first two rounds and be able to adjust, you know, getting hit by Zab. He's shown that, you know, he's a mentally tough guy. I don't know that about Matisse yet. You know, if he gets hit with a hard shot, how does he react to things like that? You know, that's something that we'll have to tell in that fight, because I think Danny definitely has the power to hurt him as well. I'm excited for the fight when it happens.
So are we, brother. So are we. Well, CT, thanks, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold and patch in another fan before we get our guest.
All right, thank you.
You know, another thing, too, is that any fighter that decides to get in with Lucas Matisse, even though, you know, Lamont Peterson obviously has been up against some of some really good contenders out there and fighters, and his resume spoke for itself. But at the same time, I think you're going to agree with me here, Gabriel, is that you have to throw out that equation of who you fought. Because I don't think any of those guys, from Amir Khan to Zab Judah, Lamont Peterson, none of them are going to equal the punching power that Lucas Matisse brings. You know, this is a guy that you have to prepare yourself and understand his best position of throwing a punch. You have to take that away from him in order to be successful, because you're not going to face the same guy that didn't know exactly where to put his feet at to get that extra, you know, inch. Didn't really cut the ring off, you know. He's a student of the game. I keep saying that over and over. He surpassed Chino Madonna. This guy is starting to understand where he stands in the lesson of boxing. But you could take that away because it's still fresh in his mind.
Yeah, he's. I think he really ties into the fight that's happening this weekend with Frotch and Kessler, and that he learned a really harsh lesson. He had to learn it twice. He gets it now. He's knocking people out. You know, similar to Marvin Hagler getting his title shot and then getting robbed. You know, getting a draw, and deciding from now on, you know, I'm going to be my own judges. It's his happy birthday today, or it's his birthday today, so happy birthday to Marvin. But Yeah, Matisse just seems to be on a mission. He seems to get it. Golden Boy's really embracing him. I don't know if we're going to call him the next Manny Pacquiao just yet. He's got some levels to ascend, but he's certainly on his way to really setting his own legend. I don't think that's really fair, kind of put that on him. He's the new this or that. He's the new Lucas Matisse. Let him be his own man.
Yeah, I didn't really care for the whole he's the new Manny Pacquiao thing. I was like, easy there. Let's relax with all that now.
It's just so, you know, it's Schaefer. So excited.
You know?
So ready to just, you know, give some propaganda to the fans. It's like, just calm down. We're all excited. It's a puncher. But I wish Oscar was a better orator. We wouldn't get stuck with Schaefer all the time. Well, I think it's time for our guest.
Yeah, let's call him in. We're going to be calling Ray Beltran here on Leaving the Ring. He wants to wants to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. Make sure you download the iPhone and Android app so that you can tune in live and you can call in directly from your iPhone. You can hit us up. It will call us, you know, the number, or you can hit us on email.
Hello.
Hello. Can I please speak to Ray?
Yeah, that's me.
What's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just resting.
Resting up? Did you work out today or what?
Yeah, well, I just get back from the gym, you know, and just have a little sleep, recover.
Brother. Well, we won't keep you on too long and stuff, man. Hey, you know, you've been on the winning streak, and you've had some good fights. You've got a lot of fight fans excited about you. You're going in there and you're mixing it up. Originally, you were known as the sparring partner for Manny Pacquiao, but it's like now you're coming into your own. When that was coming around, let me ask you this, because I've always wondered this. With your loss, which was right before, I believe it was right before the Hank Lundy fight. With Luis Ramos Jr., right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Did it take you a minute? Because I've always thought this. When you become somebody's spar partner and you become the number one guys to spar a particular fighter, that sometimes you kind of get stuck into that sparring mode. Do you think that kind of happened for you? You know, you went in with Luis Ramos. Did you get stuck a little bit with the sparring mentality, or what happened that night? Or did it take a little bit for it to shake off?
No, you know what? Everybody think about the same thing, but people don't realize it's not the same training at the gym and then being inactive. You know what I mean? It's different if you're training with the top 10 guys and you're active. I mean, yeah, it can make sense. You know, it can become your sparring partner mentality, because I mean, you're fighting and you're training with the best guys and you're fighting. And you don't get any better. I mean, that means you get to the sparring partner mentality. But I mean, situation was different. To me, what really gave to me was inactivity. If you really think about it, before that, I just did like two fights. But before that, I did like, it took like 3 years, I mean, to really fight. You know, I only made like one fight in a year. And before that, I did it, you know, I think like maybe 4 years, you know what I mean? Then I only did like two fights. Like, I fought with NABF. The USBA with Carlos Vinan. And then I win the title, and then right away I get the fight with Chavir Bouguer. And then again, I fight with Ramos. So to me, what I really feel like, I still need to get more activity. You know, I still feel rusty mentally, you know what I mean?
Do you think that?
And that really gets to me, you know what I mean?
So let me ask you. You were inactivity, and you stopped fighting in 2008, then you got back in the ring in 2010. Is that when you started working with Manny Pacquiao? What year did you start working with
him? No. I started working with Manny for like since his first fight with Marquez, I think.
Oh, so that's a while back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't really fighting often, you know. So to me, I mean, I know I feel it.
So, what I mean,
really bothered me was
when
activity.
Right. When you made your comeback, you know, you knocked out a David Torres, you won the title, and then you got in before you got in with Sharif. Do you think that they kind of you know, your management, or let's say your promoter, do you think they rushed you a bit because of the fact that you were sparring with Manny and they thought, hey, this guy doesn't need, you know, to be rebuilt back up. He's in there with one of the best fighters in the world. Just throw him in and he should have a win on under his belt with every fight. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think they rushed it too a little bit. You know what I mean? I think if I could manage myself, I mean, boxing never say no. They put the opportunity there and you don't feel like that well yet, but hey, if I could, let's do it. You know what I mean? But if you have those small people behind you and you don't have the talent, and you know what? You haven't been fighting in a while. Let's get a warm up. You know, like let's get a couple fights, you know, to feel good, to feel comfortable, and then we get the good fight. You know what I mean? So I think we need. I mean, wrestling in that situation. You know, I mean, I was off for a while, and before David Torres, I even took a knock. Before I fought David Torres, man, it was a while since I did a fight before David Torres. So it was a while, you know what I mean? So that's what I felt like it really bothers me a little bit, you know, that it kind of gave us a little bit, you know.
Hi, how you doing, Raymond? This is Gabriel.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, man? So you've been working with Manny. It's good to see you, man. It's nice to see you on a nice winning streak because you're one of those guys always in the gym. You're always working really hard, very consistent. You remind me of like Alejandro Perez, like that. Both of you guys are staples there at the wild card.
Yeah.
You've been working with Manny for since 2004, that first Marquez fight. I mean, 20-something fights. Can you talk a little bit about how you both have grown and changed during that period? How you were when you first came across him? What were your impressions?
Well, my impression, you know, like, I mean, I came from Arizona. I never had that kind of experience with a world champion. I mean, I fought with Michael Cabral before, you know, but he's a different style. But I started with Manny, you know, and Manny was another level, man. Manny, it was very aggressive, you know. It was very, very aggressive. With the time, people don't realize Manny became a better boxer. That way, he was able to make those super fights, but before it was just rhythm, just aggressive, you know what I mean? So it was easier to figure him out, you know what I mean? But then they started working the angles, they started boxing better, the head movement, and he became a way better boxer, you know, that was making who he is right now, you know?
Was he just, like, really predictable? He would throw the same punch over and over again because he knew that was the hard one, or was it just everything, like all the things that you learned, like off-speed pitching and changing angles, changing velocity? All of it, the nuances, he just didn't have those?
No, he didn't have it before. It was just aggressive, you know. It was just aggressive, same punch, like jab right hand, you know, and just aggressive, just throw a lot of punches, you know. And once you get the rhythm, I mean, it was easier. I'm not saying it was easy, but it was, you can have more chance to work it out, you know what I mean?
Go ahead.
Now, and then he becomes more head movement, you know. He works the angles, counterpunch, you know, a lot of stuff, you know. So he becomes more unpredictable. I mean, plus the speed and power, you know.
When did that start to happen, do you think? When did you, as a sparring partner with him, start to notice that?
Well, you know what? I don't even remember because, you know, I was with him for like...
fights, like 22 fights or something.
Yeah, so I mean, you don't even realize when you start like, to when you get to a point, it's like, whoa. I mean, you realize to like so many fights and then whoa, you know, like whoa, it's not as different, you know. But you don't get it from one fight to another. You just little by little. You know what I mean?
Was there anything different? I mean, you've worked with a lot of guys. I mean, that speed and power, like as you've been at the wild card all this time. You've got to work with a lot of top people. You've fought some top people. Where now, like having like real perspective on Pacquiao versus like the, you know, the rest of the crop. Where do you put him in terms of the people that you've dealt with in the ring?
Well, my experience, you know, I put him number one because with many you can't even relax, not even a second. It's very unpredictable now. You don't know. With him, you don't know what to expect because he got his legs very, legs movement are real good, his hand speed good, power is good, you know. And the legs put him in and out and angle You know what I mean? Like, real quick. So with him, you can relax. It's very intense. Training with him is very intense. So I work with other guys, and I mean, with other guys, I can relax. I work with Amir Khan, you know, what's his name? Linares, Lascano, some other champions, you know what I mean? And with other guys, you can relax, you know, but with him, I mean, you can relax not even a second. I mean, it's always intense, intensity, you know? Even without throwing punches, you're working, you know what I mean?
So you're always vigilant.
Yeah.
You're always watching. It's like seeing what he's going to do. And I've seen you guys work before. It's interesting because he kind of seems relaxed and yet he's so explosive. You're not quite sure when he's on or off. Is he kind of fooling around in there, or is he going to do something? It's interesting you mentioned Linares and Khan because they're both kind of speedy boxers, but they're not the whole package. Like maybe the chins aren't the best. Certainly the power isn't like Manny's, but they almost like similar skill sets in that they're fast guys and they rely on that. Where do you rank the speed of the three guys?
Well, I mean,
or is it different? Is it hard to really tell? They're all just fast.
Well, I think Amir is very fast, but that will really make the difference on the three of them. Sometimes, yeah, it can be fast, but you have the good. How you say in English? Targeting. When you don't miss no punches, you know what I mean? You hit the target every time. You know, Amir is very good on that. You know, it's like almost he's good on putting the punches on the target. You know what I mean? Very accurate, you know. The other guys, yeah, they're fast and all that. It can be a little bit faster than many, maybe, but they're not the accurate as many, you know what I mean?
Right.
Plus, many have the power, you know. You got more power than they are, you know what I mean? I mean, Amir is not really hard, you know. Linares either, you know. But many really, he can punch.
Where do you go from here now? I mean, what's up next for you in your career? What's the talks? From your manager, Steve Bader, what do you guys plan on doing next?
Well, you know what, it's different talks right now. But one of the talks they say that I'm very interested in trying to make the fight happen with Burns, you know, Ricky Burns. But I don't know, man. I don't think they would take the fight, you know.
Do you be willing to go down to his in his turf?
I go to his house, man, even to his own house, right there where he lives, you know, fight in his backyard, you know, I don't care. Go get the title away from him.
What do you think has to happen? Obviously it's got to be for the right money, though, right, Ray?
Well, to me, you know, in my situation, I mean...
Because we've had fighters on here call out other fighters, and then... You know, they get us all pumped up, and then all of a sudden, something comes in the way where it's, well, you know, I don't want to take it for this amount of money. I want it, you know. So let's say Ricky Burns decides to take it. What is the amount? I mean, what would stop you from not taking it? You're calling him out now, but
nothing will stop it. The only thing will stop it is that, you know what, Ray, you're too hard for me. I don't want to lose my title, so I don't want to fight you. Because if they say I pay you $20,000, I go and fight for it anyways. I go and kick. Go and fucking, the title's a title shot, you know, because after I win the title, the money will come for me, you know what I mean? I know they will try to play the game and try to put on, there's no money or whatever. Why? Because they want to keep them safe. You know what I mean? They try to play the game, so they fight whoever they want so they can keep them the champions as long as they can, you know what I mean? There is a risky fighter, you know, and there's no convenience for them. They try to offer way less money than the normal, you know, so they don't make the fight happen, you know what I mean? And try to look good, you know, this and that, but you know what I mean?
I actually think that's a really good, you know, style matchup. Let me ask, what did you think about his last performance?
You know what, man, I haven't even seen it yet. You know, honestly, I haven't even seen it. I heard, you know, it didn't look good and all that. And the other guy quit, you know, the other guy just quit. Because he heard him saying, you know, on the left one hand on the ninth round or eighth round, something like that, you know. But
it was a trippy fight. Yeah,
it was weird.
Burns was getting outboxed, so he pretty soundly. But the other guy faded pretty bad. He was an older guy, And Burns, I mean, he put some stuff on him a little bit as it was going on. He was just kind of like, screw it, I'm not going to box. I'm just going to try to fight. And the pressure wilted the guy, and eventually he quit. It was odd, but, I mean, you could see it, you know, that he was fading. But I'd watch that fight. I think it's an all-action.
I mean, you know, how can you quit in a world title shot? I mean, come on, you know, if one hurts, you know, just, I mean, you know what? Just go with the other one, you know, and finish the fight. Especially, I heard he was winning, I don't know.
Oh, dude, he was totally winning. Yeah, he was, I mean,
yeah,
there was no question.
Come on, man, I mean, how can you quit? I mean, maybe, I don't know, man. I don't want to think about it, but it's not,
yeah.
You know, if he's going to get paid on the side too, you know what? The first chance you got, you quit or you pay extra money, I don't know, man. Like, or you don't have enough heart. Come on, man, one hand, you know, like, my last fight, I messed up my hand the first round. When I put him down, I messed up so bad my hand, man. And I thought it was broke, you know. And you know what? I started fighting my right hand, you know. My right hand, I have to win the fight, you know. Especially for a title shot, hey, fuck it, you know. It's a title shot, you know.
Seriously. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It just, you know, hopefully, you know, nothing funky is going on there. But you never know. It is boxing after all. But, well, hopefully
yeah.
You get your shot, man. I would like to see that fight. I think it's an all-action fight. You're certainly, do you have any sort of indication when is next for you to get in the ring?
No, I talked to Brad Goodman yesterday. I saw him at the gym, and he told me it might be possible that I fight in September on the Marquez and Bradley fight, you know, the undercard, you know.
Put you and Ricky Burns under that card.
Yeah, but like I told you, man, they won't bring him over. They don't want to lose.
Yeah.
They'll keep Ricky Burns and back in his home to keep him in shape as long as they can. They'll, you know what I mean? Those promoters invest so much money on him, they don't want to take a chance. Why they come to America? In America, all the best fighters, everybody want to come here. The competition is here. You know what I mean? If you become a champion here, I mean, you can be, I mean, you're okay. You know what I mean? I'm not saying Ricky Burns not a good fighter. Yeah, he's a good fighter, you know, and you got to be a good fighter also to be a champion. You know what I mean? But my point is, I mean, it's not, I don't think he's at the level of the fighters here. That's why he keep fighting over there.
I think he's a hell of a fighter, you know, and I also think that a lot of the UK fighters have been proving that they want to go that extra mile winning over not just the UK fans, but worldwide fans.
Hey, is they're going to help this in the UK?
Yeah.
Well, hey, share to me. Hey, look, you can't lose a fight, hey, share to me. I hope you heard this shit, you know what I mean? Hey, shit, you know what I mean? So, I'm not the kind of fighter to really talk shit, but I'm gonna talk shit right now. You know what I mean? I want my title shot, and honestly, I mean, if you're gonna be a real champion, you gotta come here to the States. You gotta come here. That's where real competition is. I see some fighters in Mexico, my country. They become champions, and all they do defense. They defend the title in Mexico, only in Mexico. They never fight in HBO or the big event here. Why? Because they don't. If they fight here, they don't have to fight at good competition level, and it's risky for them. But they might lose the titles, and that's why they keep them fucking fighting in Mexico with guys that I don't know who they are.
Yes.
Honestly.
Right.
Honestly, I mean, there's a lot of fighters like that. They keep them fighting in the country, you know why? Because no. Let's don't go to the United States because over there they're going to. But I have to fight somebody. We might lose the title. We better make some 3-4 defenses here and keep it long as long as we can.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, this is such a business. You know, it's like, well, you know, we could stay here, keep the title, you know, make some money. I mean,
listen, how much money you can make if you don't fight at the big event? Honestly, I mean, you fight your country, how much money you can make? I mean, the UK maybe is different. I don't know. But in Mexico, I mean, if you really want to make money, you got to fight the best. People talk about business. I talk about how to be a real boxer. You know what I mean? I don't talk about. I mean,
you're not getting into arguments with me, Ray. You know, without question.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying my thoughts. You know, and sometimes I'm not to say. You know, I'm talking about like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't respect guys. I mean, I'm a real fan of a real champions. You know what I mean? you know, my idols, and I got a lot of idols in boxing sport. And I don't really respect some champions. They keep them. I'm business for them. They're in a good place and with the right people and all that. But to me, I look at to be remembered on my you know, by the fans. Maybe my name with the years, they say my name. Hey, you know what? Ray was a real champion or was a good fighter. You know, they really say it, they really mean it. When some other fighters, they're champions, but people don't remember them. You know what I mean? That's my point.
No, I agree with you. We were talking earlier about Adrian Broner jumping up to fight Malignaggi and skipping over all the guys at 140 and still saying, well, I'm the best fighter. You know, I'm Mr. HBO and this and that. Well, dude, you know, all the tough fights are at 140, and you're going to go up and fight Pauly? I mean, Pauly's a nice guy and everything, but he's not the most dangerous guy at 147 even. You know, so I'd like to see it. You know, hopefully we can lure him here or at least some other big, you know, big fight can.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, bro. I get kind of intense, you know what I mean? But it's my
youth. Oh, we like it.
You know, it's not against you. It's against the opponent of the business or whatever it is. Man, I just want to fight my title, you know what I mean? I've been screwed a couple of times, and I'm just pissed in the good way. I'm not pissed in the bad way, man. But I'm saying, hey, you know what? Let's fucking do it, you know? I just want to fight for a title, man. I'm so hungry, you know, and when I got, I want to have my belt, you know, and people, I mean, it just pisses me off when they play too much games. They try to fight names with names, and the people that are in the challenges, they don't even give a shot, you know what I mean? So I think I earned it, you know. I kept a couple guys, top ranked guys, and I seen guys, and they haven't even beat nobody, and they just stopped. Top 10 level, and they get a title shot. You know what I mean? And so I'm a top 10 right now, so I think I deserve it. You know?
No, I agree with you. At this point, you know, it's that time. And you've asked questions of guys. I'd love to see you get the title shot. I think you've earned it. You know, I'd certainly like to see the Burns fight, but hopefully, you know, there's something else in the mix as well that we can actually make. You know, here in the U.S., I don't think he's going to come out here, but. And certainly you'd be willing to go over there, though, right?
And you know what? That's not a problem. I go over there. I go all the way over there. That's not a problem. If he doesn't come, I go. I mean, he doesn't have to come. I go. He's a champion. You say where he is, and I go and fight for a title, you know? And I appreciate that if they give me that opportunity, you know what I mean?
Hey, our pleasure.
I appreciate it, you know what I mean? And so I'm down, man.
Well, keep us surprised, Ray, and you know, we'll keep in touch and let us know what's going on with you, and hopefully you get your title shot later on this year.
Well, thank you, man. I'm gonna keep training hard, you know, until I keep winning, you know, because that's the only way I'm gonna get there, you know. But I can't afford one loss. But I gotta be careful right now who I fight, you know, or I gotta fight the right guys, you know. Like I'm talking about like names, you know, not just any guy. To me, I'm the kind of guy that if I'm going to fight like a, let's say, like a tuna fight, I don't like tuna fights. You take a risk anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I like
absolutely.
To fight the good guys, the top guys, you know what I mean? Because, that's a challenge, you know what I mean? If you lose, I mean, I'm not thinking about losing, but I'm saying you lose to somebody who was good, you know what I mean? But you never know what's going to happen.
When you're working in the gym all the time, those are the tune-up fights. You're in shape. You're ready to go, you know? You should be ready for the big shot when they call, and you always are, you know?
Yeah, man, and so that's what I'm saying. I want to take the big chance at the bigger races. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
Well, Ray, thank you again, brother. And you know, we're gonna be rooting for you, and hopefully you get that fight. And hopefully Ricky Burns hears this so that he can think about it. You know, think about what he wants to do. If he wants to get in the ring with you, redeem himself definitely because of his last performance. A lot of fight fans were very disappointed in him and kind of bagged on him pretty hard. So. I think if he wants to redeem himself, his name with the fight fans, I think your name would be the right way of going about it to trying to win over the fans that were hard on him. But it's a really difficult fight. I want to see this fight. I think it's a great fight. It's a great style matchup between you two.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know what? I'm the kind of fighter that I don't if he didn't look good in the last fight, it doesn't mean that's it. No, maybe you don't know. Maybe some night. It's not your night. Maybe you didn't feel well. You know what I mean? Maybe when he comes back, whoa, he looks so fucking good, you know? Because sometimes your night is not the night. You know what I mean? It's not your night. and your body don't respond well or whatever, you know what I mean? So I understand that because I'm a bison. Sometimes it happens. But I wish they give an opportunity, you know what I mean? I'd really step it up, you know, and give me the shot, you know?
I hope so too, man, because, you know, we always want to see good matches. And I think you deserve it. Like I said, you've been in there with some tough fights and you've been winning. So, you know, we always want to see the guy that's been putting in the work. We always want to see them come up and get a chance and then go from there. See if the timing was right. Right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. And like I said, I'll be waiting, man. I'll be waiting. And just only God knows. Only God knows what's going to happen.
Well, keep working, brother. Keep working. You're almost there, man. Thanks again for calling in. And can't wait to talk to you again here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Thank you, man. God bless you, man. And thank you for having some time for me.
Okay. Talk to you soon, brother.
Take a bye.
Ray Beltran here on Leaving the Ring Radio. He's been on a winning streak, and he's been giving us some really exciting fights. Calls out Ricky Burns from the UK. I really like this matchup. I don't know how other fight fans feel about it, but I think it's a really good matchup. I mean, Ricky Burns, granted, he didn't look that great. He was struggling. He was losing that fight. But I tend to agree with Ray here saying that, you know, out of however many fights you get in, there's always going to be one you don't look that fantastic, you know, that you're going to judge and say, well, you know, it didn't look that good. But you got to go and just kind of configure that it was an off night, and you'll hope to see him get back in there and do something a little bit different. Well, you know, we'll get himself back on track. So that could be a strong possibility with Ricky Burns. I wouldn't count him out. But, you know, facing a Ray Beltran, that's a tough style matchup. I think that Ray's going to be there. Definitely he's not going to quit. I think he'll be there to the end. And you heard it from him, straight from his mouth. He wants this fight. He doesn't care. He'll go to his house to face him. So let's see what happens here. Let's patch in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. I'm going to go down the line who's been holding on the longest here on Leaving the Ring. So let's go. Man, got a lot of calls here. So let me just look down the line. Let's go with, I think we got the homie from Puerto Rico, Rob Riddler. You there, brother?
Yo, what's up?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, good. I've been chasing this stupid cat around this house all damn day. Some street cat, little street kitten snuck in my house, hiding everywhere. Still haven't found it.
Chasing some trim,
yo,
huh?
Yo, but I just want to talk about four fighters, Alexander Garcia, Judah, and Matisse. Yeah.
Go for it.
The only reason I think that Matisse is a really, really bad matchup for Garcia at the moment is because if you look at those fights, when Matisse fought Alexander and Judah, the only reason Judah and Alexander were able to survive were the same reasons that they survived against same reasons that Judah survived against Garcia. They had footwork. They had good footwork. So when Matisse knocked him down, he couldn't finish because, you know, I don't think he was prepared for that type of footwork. I think now he's doing a better job of it, but he still hasn't fought an opponent that has that type of footwork, and he's not going to find that opponent in Danny Garcia again. Garcia, to me, doesn't really have that type of footwork that if he gets dropped, he's going to have the ability to get away from it. So I just, you know, to me, it's like he's just going to walk into another one of these opponents that is a sitting target. And I for one have seen the Argentina fights that he's had in his hometown with some guys that you know, just wouldn't go down. You know, these random dudes that, you know, these random nobodies that are a pain to knock out, apparently, where he's, you know, had swollen eyes shut, you know, busted eye, you know, over the eyes, and really nasty cuts, and he just doesn't really stop coming forward. He reminds me a lot of Margarito when the fight gets like that. He just keeps coming forward, and, you know, I don't know. It's like if you don't have the footwork, I don't think Matisse is a good matchup for you. And, just looking at it, and who gets hurt by Zab Judah in 2013 in the 12th round? That's ridiculous. I posted that on Facebook immediately laughing. Like, I just saw it, and I was like, what is this? Like, you know, is this 1998 or something? Like,
no, this is what I think. I think that Danny Garcia has, in a way, has become a little bit more daring since he's became a champion. You know, where he misses a shot, and you watch that Zab Judah shot. I watched this really carefully, and I was just like, there's something different about this kid. You know, go back to in the beginning, where his right hand really didn't, you know, follow through. His right hand follows through. But here's the thing. Here's the extra little curse or magic, whatever you want to call it, okay? But he follows through, and if he misses, he stays there to try to throw another right. But here's the thing is that the other right he throws, he's not in the stance to have power behind it. It's almost like he's just looking to catch you, like touch you with it to let you know, ah, I got you. Like, I at least touched you, you know? So
Yeah. That's
why I think he got caught. That's why I think, too, that that's why I said earlier on the show that his team's got to go back and go, okay, we can't allow him to do this anymore. Because regardless of you know, facing Amir Khan, he's got speed, he's got power, but he doesn't have the machine power. Same thing with Zab Judah. Speed, he's got spurts of power. It's not a consistent, you know, consistent power where it's always going to keep coming at you all the time. There's a big difference there, you know, where Zab, even Amir Khan, they have to take resting points in order for them to throw some power shots. So we've seen with Amir Khan that the kid gasses himself every single time because, you know, he just wants to knock everybody out as fast as he can.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work like that for some people. With Lucas, it's a little bit different because I think this guy, no matter what he does, there's going to be power behind it. I think even if he's gassed out, because that's what punchers are known for. You know, I mean, go back to Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. knocking out Malvick Taylor. Is that 12 rounds, and you know this guy had to be tired, but there's still power behind him. Same thing with Tito Trinidad. He's dangerous all the way down. You know, there's just some guys that they're always going to be dangerous. They got heavy hands, and no matter when they throw it and what timing they throw it, they have a lucky shot to do it. So that's what Danny and his team kind of have to go back to that drawing board and go, okay, you've been foolish, you've been daring, but we can't be Evel Knievel with Lucas Matisse. There's just no way we can do that.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, if you look at Matisse right now, he seems like he's evolved so much as, like more of a counterpuncher almost, because he looks like he's catching the opponents either as they're throwing the shot or when they're like, you can see it sort of flinch to throw it almost, or when they're thinking about throwing something, he sort of like sees it and like just, you know, let's
timing
the
now,
power
brother.
Just rip.
Yeah.
It's timing now.
He has
that's
amazing timing.
Yeah, he has timing now because before you go back and like you mentioned the earlier fights in Argentina, you look at that. There's a huge difference of then to now where then you had power and like most guys that have power, and they understand, I got heavy hands, they throw, hoping to land something. And a lot of times, a lot of guys get stuck with that. Look at, what's his name? Ricardo Mayorga. Guy had power, but he didn't know how to land it. He just didn't know when to put it. He got lucky with some, you know, with shots and stuff, so it was successful in the lighter, in 140 division, but he really never got to understand footwork and when to place that, where to place the power at, and it seized the moment where Lucas, you can kind of see the timing. He worked at that. He worked at the timing because, and even if you have power, it doesn't matter if you can't hit the target. So that's a huge difference that I see from him right now.
And also, this fight reminds me a lot of I'm taking it back to Tito Vargas. I think I just think that as a fighter right now, Matisse might not be the most well-rounded fighter, but I think in the aspects of what would give Garcia trouble, I think he's very polished in those aspects of a fighter, of being an opponent. I think he's very polished in counterpunching, which would be great because Garcia likes to throw really wide shots at the worst times. He's really good at you know, hey, measuring distance and establishing his distance early in a fight, which tends to people don't do against Garcia, even though he doesn't move a lot. And cardio, power punching, you know, I think these are things that would give him trouble. So I think he's polished, and I think Garcia, he needs to get away from his dad, I think, because his dad is focusing on being more of a personality than being a trainer.
Well, I disagree. I really disagree there. His dad got him here. You can't just discard him for no reason. That sort of bond is sacred, and what he's doing is strategic. He's shielding. He's being the shield for his father or for his son, so that his son doesn't have to waste any energy. It's a classic.
I wouldn't say you have to discard him completely.
I have to stop you here because we have our next guest on the line, and he's calling all the way from Russia, Mr. Ruslan Provodnikov. I really appreciate the call. Please call back again. Highly intelligent stuff. You're a good, you know, learned boxing fan. But got to disagree with you about Angel, but I do have to get to Ruslan. We can pick up that debate when the fight's officially announced. All right, brother. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Peace. Let's bring on Ruslan here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
And he should be in queue there, Dave. I sent you the area code.
I don't. Okay, got it. Ruslan, do we have you here on Leaving the Ring Radio?
He's going to be here with Vadim Kornilov, his manager and translator. And
Vadim?
Can you hear me, Russia? Vadim?
Yeah. We can hear you.
Okay. Ruslan, do you listen?
Can we? Thank you for joining us. I appreciate you calling. Right. I think it's late over there in Russia. So thanks for taking the time out, man.
Yeah, he's. I can hear him. He'll. There's a little bit of a delay, so just Gabe, you might have to give it a little bit of time in order for me to translate, but because he's. Руслан, они говорят, спасибо, что ты пришел в такое неудобное время.
Ничего страшного, я открыт для всех.
He says, no problem, I'm glad to be here, and I'm always open to you guys, and I'm always glad to be here.
We're happy to have him on with us. Really excited about having him on with us here on Leaving the Ring. After the Lucas Matisse fight, during the Lucas Matisse fight, he was tweeting out how he would like that fight. How realistic, though, being that there's a cold war between Top Rank and Golden Boy, could that happen? What measures would he go for himself to make that fight happen? Because obviously that would be a dream fight for all fight fans.
Well, you guys are tied to Banner, though, right? I mean, you're not. That I mean,
yeah,
a lot of people
mistake that we're tied to Top Rank or Golden Boy, but we're not. So. Unless
you would have been, though, had you guys actually officially won the fight as opposed to winning it in fans' eyes and not on the cards, right? You guys would have been stuck with options and maybe not be open to being able to pursue any sort of fight you want, correct?
Initially, the deal with Top Rank was trying to make the deal with having options no matter what, but luckily we were able to pursue our side of the story, and we were able to make the deal where if Ruslan lost, they would not get options. So that's why Ruslan's completely 100% with Banner, and we're open to, you know, fighting fighters that are with Golden Boy or Top Ranks, and it should make it a lot easier to make the fight.
So that's where I'm a bit confused. I thought that regardless of win or lose, that they were going to have certain ties with you guys, but you're saying that that you guys were able to not do that with them, and how was that? I mean.
Yeah, no
Can
ties at
that?
All. Options were on the contract only if the Ruslan became a world champion.
Sweet.
So
we talked about it afterwards that in a sense, in not getting the decision, you guys won just because all that's presented to you. Can I first ask to Ruslan, how is he feeling after that fight? I mean, it's been some time. He's had a chance to heal. Has he fully healed? Does he feel healthy returning from that brutal fight?
Руслан, как ты себя чувствуешь после боя? Уже время прошло, ты восстановился. Насколько ты себя хорошо чувствуешь?
Я хочу про замечательное, жду боя, жду драку, то есть жду новостей, чтобы выехать на тренировочный лагерь и готовиться к следующему бою.
I feel 100% great. I'm actually waiting for the time to come sooner than later for me to come out to training camp and get my next fight. I'm just waiting for my next date because I'm ready to start training.
Are you doing any sort of pre-camp stuff or any, I knew you had done that before. I mean, are you able to train at this point, or are you just fully letting your body heal?
Ты сейчас делаешь что-то, тренируешься как-то, или ты полностью просто даешь телу отдохнуть?
Ну, в полную силу не тренируюсь, но день через день, то есть, когда плаваю, делаю растяжки, то есть, делаю специальные упражнения, которые дал тренер физподготовки, то есть, беру себя в тонусе, то есть, где-то постоянно, то есть, так, то есть, ну, вот в таком плане.
I'm not training fully right now, but, you know, always in between the fights, in between my training camps, I will do a lot of stretching, a lot of swimming, and now this time I actually added a lot of exercises from what Gavin McMillan, the strength and conditioning coach from my last fight, brought in. So I'm doing a lot of exercises that he taught me to do, and he told me to keep on doing them while I'm off camp. So I'm doing a lot of different leg exercises and stuff like that to just be ready to start training whenever I have to.
I have to ask... watching the fight with Lucas Matisse this Saturday with Lamont Peterson, what were his thoughts, and how badly does he want that fight with Lucas?
Руслан, я там писал, что ты когда во время боя Матисса Питерсон, что потому что там сказали, что он типа следующий Пакьяо, я там в Твиттере написал, что типа я готов со следующим Пакьяо выйти хоть завтра. Они тебя спрашивают, насколько сильно ты хочешь этот бой с Лукасом Матисса. Он нокаутировал Питерсона в четвертом раунде.
Ну, я уже неоднократно говорил, что я готов драться с кем угодно, не в моих правилах отказываться от боксеров. Я пришел сюда для того, чтобы доказывать, что я лучший, и поэтому я готов драться с лучшими. Кто это будет, Матисс или Питерсон, без проблем, я еще раз говорю, Как только мне скажут соперника, я тут же скажу «да», без проблем. Я отвечаю за твои слова, еще раз говорю.
Yeah, I mean, I've tweeted it before on other fights as well, and then Lucas Matisse is a great fighter. He showed it in this fight against Peterson. But, you know, I've always said, and I'll say it again, I'm ready to fight anybody because you don't have to, even before the fight's offered to me, if any of the big fighters, because I know that I'll be exciting in the big fights. That's why I'm looking for the big opponents, you know. And I'll say yes before the fight is offered to me. That's what happened with Bradley. I said yes even before I knew the terms. So I'll say yes to any other fight, you know. And Matisse, they say he's the next Manny Pacquiao. Well, then I should fight him because I think we would have a great fight. I think the fans would be happy. That's what's important.
Styles, obviously the styles would be completely different, you know, with Timothy Bradley, he's more of a boxer. Matisse is obviously going to, in his own, of being much more of a polished fighter. So my question is that fans right now are thinking that in order to beat a Lucas Matisse, who's shown he's got some, you know, he's got power in both hands, is to be more of a boxer. The guys that have lost against him have been in front of him. So he's willing to bet his chin to be able to take a shot from Lucas Matisse?
После многих боев Лукаса Матисса сделали вывод многие, что чтобы его выиграть, нужно быть боксером. Так как те, которые стоят перед ним, они не могут принимать его сильные удары. У него сила в двух руках. Когда ты заявляешь, что ты готов с ним драться, учитывая, что ты не техничный боксер, а именно такой же, который будет стоять перед ним, ты говоришь о том, что ты можешь взять его, ну, то есть ты не боишься его удара.
Я не боюсь ни его ударов. Я еще раз говорю, что я принимая любой вызов, любой бой, и буду драться. То есть я выхожу только выигрывать. Я никогда не думаю о том, что будет. Я выхожу за победу, выхожу выигрывать, как бы это ни было. А там как что случится. Мне не важно.
I'm not afraid of him or his punch, and I don't think it's a problem for me, actually, because, I mean, I understand a boxer's style would probably be better for him, just like they thought a boxer's style would be somebody who can beat me as well. But you saw what happened to Bradley. And I think for Lucas Matisse to get a boxer-style opponent, I don't think it would be an interesting fight. I think if he fought me, it would be an interesting fight because we would go toe-to-toe. And that would be the question, whose chin can take the punch? Because I know he'd be afraid of my punches as well.
What do you see in him? A lot of people are talking about this, and he's kind of developed into, like Dave said, a little more polished in terms of he's not just a pure brawler. And Ruslan's polished his game. I'm just curious, can he break down what he sees in Matisse? Does he see what everybody else does, this polished power puncher, or does he think it's, you know, what does he think of?
Что ты думаешь о Матиссе? Многие говорят, что он сильно бьет, в то же время он отполированный, достаточно техничный. Ты видишь в нем какие-то ошибки? И что ты видишь вообще в нем как в боксере? И как ты думаешь, можно его выиграть?
Я не видел ни одного его боя, только на слышал, что это хороший бьющий боксер. И поэтому я не люблю делать прогнозы, я не хочу делать там никаких, говорить что-то. Как бы. Я всегда придерживаюсь одного, как бы. Дайте бой, мы выйдем и подеремся, и выиграть можно любого. Я это доказал в бою с Брэдли, я думаю, что меня скидывать со счетов не нужно, как бы, поэтому. Если мы будем отказываться от боя, там, заниматься этой политикой, тогда бокс у нас кончится. Я боец, и я пришел сюда, чтобы драться, поэтому я жду боев. Я жду боев, дайте мне Матисса, дайте мне Питерсона, без проблем. То есть я тут же скажу «да», и выйду, и буду драться, и буду доказывать, что такие же боксеры, которых можно выигрывать. Мы никогда не узнаем, как может сложиться бой, и этот бой не состоится.
I just want to say that I've only seen his last fight. I mean, I haven't watched his other fights before. I don't know if I know he's fought some good opposition. I don't know if he's fought the best. You know, a lot of people said, I'm not going to stand two rounds with Bradley, and we all saw what happened. It's all about, you know, styles make fights. That's what's important. And you never know what's going to happen in a fight with me and Matisse. They say he's the next big star, then I think he should fight somebody like me. I don't think he should be fighting other opponents right now. He beat Peterson, who's a good fighter, and you know, he should go on to bigger fights. I don't think he should go fight guys that are less than Peterson. He should fight guys that are more than Peterson. And Peterson lost to Bradley. You know, I had an awesome fight with Bradley. I think we should be in the mix. And as far as the outcome, I don't know what's going to happen in the fight. You know, I don't like to make predictions. You never know. It's all about the styles and how they're going to match. I know that a lot of guys our promoter has been talking to, they don't really want to fight me anymore. But it doesn't, you know, just because something happened with Bradley doesn't mean that it's going to happen in the next fight. I know I'm going to be exciting. I know I'm going to be toe-to-toe with whoever I fight. And I know I'm never going to say no. You know, a lot of other fighters say I'm ready to fight anybody, but, you know, look at what they're doing. Look at what some of these promoters are doing. They're just fighting their own guys against each other over and over again. But I'm actually ready to fight any of these guys. I don't care who they're promoted by. I don't, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I just want to make exciting fights.
You feel that in not getting that decision, because I've never seen you so hungry heading into that Bradley fight. Now that you got to that level, you know what it feels like to perform at that level and do it successfully, not winning, did that leave you with still a hunger and still a need to prove even further?
Ты был в этом бою очень голодным, ты очень хотел победы с Брэдли. Ты считаешь, что не получив эту победу, ты стал еще голоднее, и ты хочешь еще больше сейчас добиться большой победы?
После этого боя, то, что мне не дали победу, я просто у меня сейчас... Во-первых, я себе стал намного увереннее в себе, я очень многое доказал в этом бою. И сейчас я рвусь снова в бой, чтобы драться с лучшими, как бы. И у меня сейчас новые мотивации, у меня сейчас новое. Я хочу доказать, что у меня тогда, что это просто чистая случайность, что мне дали победу, и что я сейчас полностью уверен, что я могу стать чемпионом. Я еще больше стал уверен, поэтому я сейчас еще больше рвусь в бой, чтобы доказать это, что я могу стать чемпионом мира, что я могу быть лучшим. Поэтому мне хочется доказывать, но я хочу принимать любой вызов. Я приму любой вызов, чтобы убраться с кем угодно. Еще раз говорю, что я также голодный, я также уверенный в себе и жду боя.
Yes, you are right. I mean, I was very hungry in this fight. I really wanted that title really bad, and maybe that's why I didn't get it, because I wanted it too bad. You know, I was lunging forward, trying to knock him out, you know, as much as I could, instead of maybe being more careful. But my confidence is a lot higher now, because, you know, sparring with Manny and now in this fight, I proved to myself I can fight anybody at the top level. But my hunger definitely got more. You know, it got worse. Because I know that title, it was almost there. I almost had it. And now, you know, I got to find another fighter who will fight me. And I got to fight another champion who will fight me. And I know that a lot of, you know, I've heard Alvarado, you know, I heard HBO wanted that fight. And I heard Alvarado doesn't really want to fight me. And I've heard other fighters who also did not want to take the fight with me. So now, my promoter's having a tough time actually getting somebody in the ring. But I am more hungry for the title because I almost had it, and I know I could have had it. So now I know I got to get it. You know, I got to become a world champion, and I'm ready to fight the best and the biggest stars.
Let me ask you, because Timothy Bradley, obviously, he moved on and to get in another big fight with Juan Marquez. How disappointed is he about that? Was there an offer to the Bradley camp and a Top Rank for a rematch? And if there was from your guys' promotional group, what happened? Why was the deal? If there was a deal, why was it killed?
I can answer for him, if that's okay. Because Ruslan and I were discussing this earlier today.
Go ahead.
Realistically, I don't think Bradley really wanted the fight that bad. So even if the financials for Marquez and Ruslan were exactly the same, I still think Bradley would push Marquez to fight Marquez, because I think Ruslan put him into the worst position ever in the ring. So why would, you know, I wouldn't recommend for my fighter to take the fight again. I personally think this fight might happen again. You know, I think the rematch might happen. But the fact that Marquez really wanted to fight Bradley in order to get this, you know, title at 147, it caused for all this to happen, because there was not really an offer made. We were talking about a rematch, but obviously the Marquez fight had more attention. But again,
Certainly,
if this fight had the same amount of attention, I don't think Bradley would have taken Ruslan instead of Marquez.
Yeah, it just makes sense. I mean, you know, in terms of name, you win this one, look good in the next one, hopefully, and you go
right
for the bigger thing. I mean, I agree with you. I think the fight's going to happen down the line. What do you think realistically, Vadim, Is the timetable for him to come back, or do you guys just fight him in some other venue off HBO? What do you think is the best course here?
Well, the feedback I'm getting from HBO is that they're very, very interested in bringing Ruslan back. So we're not considering too many other options. But I mean, there are other options, because there's other networks interested as well. But you know, we got the chance on HBO, so we want to come back on HBO and continue the career on the network, because that's probably the right thing to do, the loyal thing to do. And I think, I know right now the Alvarado fight is being pushed very hard, but I don't know if it's going to happen or not, because it doesn't seem like Top Rank or Alvarado are going forward in making the fight happen. At least that's what I hear. So if that doesn't happen, I think there's other options on HBO that, you know, other fighters that are being talked about. I don't know exactly who the fighters are, but I know there's other options for September, October. So all I hope for is that Ruslan will be back September, October, fighting somebody, and, you know, he could just keep active, because he still has many years left in him, and we don't have to get the world title fight right now. He could fight, look good, and get a big fight in the near future.
Yeah, I think everything's
a tough deal. You know, I mean, yeah. you get to the point where the fans are just kind of salivating. They want to see him back in the ring, and you almost became just too good for your own good, where it cursed you not to get back in the ring with some of the best fighters out there, because you know you got a guy that is just super dangerous. Didn't get the win, and he obviously got the loss, but he lost a lot at the same time. I mean, how does he stay motivated and not discouraged with the sport of boxing?
Руслан, ты получил очень большой шанс. Тебе не отдали победу, но тебе сейчас очень тяжело сделать следующий бой. Ну, я только что им ответил, что как бы телевидение заинтересовано и сделают все возможное, чтобы бой состоялся. Но сейчас, естественно, такие как Альварадо и многие другие отказываются, потому что, в принципе, ты не добился большого успеха, но в то же время ты показал всем, что ты опасный, и теперь никто не хочет с тобой драться. Тебя это как-то демотивирует, ну, как бы, тебе как-то это негативно влияет на тебя в этом спорте, то, что вот так может быть. Руслан.
Did we lose him?
I think we might have. Руслан, ты слышишь меня? Yeah, I think he got disconnected.
And Ruslan is calling from Russia, so, you know, connection could be a little thin here. Let me ask you this, you know. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather signed that six fight deal. Have they or have you guys thought about reaching out to them? He's looking for a strong opponent, somebody that they could face. And you know, right now, fight fans are thinking about Lucas Matisse because of how great he looked against Lamont Peterson. And obviously, the Timothy Bradley's fight is going to be down the line. If hopefully it's going to be down the line, do you guys opt to jump up and wait since you can't get something at 140, or what is the next move if you don't find something soon?
Well, actually, sadly, Ruslan announced, it was all over the internet, Ruslan wants to actually fight at 147, but at the same time, he can fight at 140, so he felt great at 147 with Timothy Bradley. So he's campaigning at 140, 147. Mayweather was definitely one of the fights that was being talked about. I think, you know, there was communication between the camps, you know, between the promoters, and as far as I know, there was no success yet, but I think that's definitely one option that might happen. If it's not in September, maybe later. But I definitely think that it's another great fight that can happen, because you know, just like Lucas Matisse, I think Ruslan proved himself in the fight with Bradley, and you know, Matisse fought Peterson, who's a great fighter. Ruslan fought Bradley, who's a great fighter, and they both showed a lot in those fights. And I think they're both well qualified, but obviously Matisse is with Golden Boy, so I think if that's what they want to do, I think it might be easier for them to make that happen.
Well, I'm curious because it does seem like Golden Boy is really making that kind of under one roof, you know, Showtime, everything's in-house kind of deal. Either you're with Heyman and Golden Boy, or you're with Heyman and you kind of work with Golden Boy. And with Top Rank, you did maintain your independence. How are you still in a position after the Bradley fight, you feel, where you can kind of maintain that independence with Banner, being with a smaller promoter? Or are you guys going to have to give up a lot of options in order to get big fights like that? Are you willing to do that?
No, definitely. As far as, I mean, again, it's not for me to answer. It's for the promoter. But as far as I've heard and as far as I understand, if a big fight is on the table, obviously we will be open to options and any type of a deal that makes sense, because it has to be fair. The same thing we did with the Top Rank for Bradley. It's always something we'll have to do.
Sure.
You know, because there's a champion, there's a superstar, and then there's another fighter that has to give up something. That's understandable. We're always open to that.
Well, I wish you all the best, man. I think you got a guy in very similar to Matisse in that they bring excitement to the ring and a fearlessness to the negotiating table. They just want to get in there with the best guys. So hopefully we see these guys down the line. And keep us apprised. I wish you guys all the best.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I think, I mean, Ruslan will be back by the end of the year, 100%. You know, just depends on who he fights. But again, obviously it brings excitement, and I agree with you. That's what we need more of, and I think that's what will revive boxing. And you know, fights like this, fights like Matisse, Garcia, you know, all these Ruslan, Mayweather, Pacquiao, these are all the guys that will keep boxing going, and then people will watch the fights and enjoy them.
I agree. You know, it's just you guys set the bar this year, and you know, and look at where we're at. It's just a very exciting year. So, man, I hope you can come back at the end of the year and give us another one.
Definitely. Thank you for having us, guys. I appreciate it.
Hey, our pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care. Give him our best.
Yeah, I will. I'll call him back right now. I'll tell him that you guys said goodbye.
All right. Awesome.
All right.
Thanks.
Have a good night, guys. Thanks. Bye.
You too.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? God.
What a fight that would be.
I know. Just thinking that. I mean, you know, it's almost one of those fights where it's a dream fight, to tell you the truth. It's one of those dream fights. You know, you sit there and you fantasize, like, wow, how exciting would it be? Because, for one, Ruslan is not, he's not a boxer. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, show you anything of beauty of footwork. He's a guy that's just going to fight you. He's going to come in.
He's got a little bit of shiftiness. I mean,
he's got some shiftiness, but it's not enough to puzzle.
He hides that right hand.
Matisse, you know what I mean?
Well, no, but it's enough to get his respect. And I think that's the thing. I don't think Matisse is going to get
the respect that comes behind it. Would be
his
right hand, and he's a big guy. He's solid. He's got a solid frame. Lucas is a little smaller, in my opinion.
Oh, he is, without question. Like,
you know what
seeing
I mean?
Seeing them in person, and I haven't seen Matisse spar, but I've seen in the gym, anyways. But I've seen Ruslan a progression of sparring sessions, and then seeing him at 147, man, I mean, he when he came in for this camp, it was the biggest I'd seen him, and the most comfortable I'd seen him making weight. He really has filled out, you know, physically and really come into his own. I think it's an interesting – they're very similar guys because Matisse still squares up. I think we get really excited when a guy can box, but when a puncher starts to box us a little bit, I think, you know, what it came down to what it's coming down to with both these guys is going to be who can take whose power. Because Ruslan really hides that right hand. Matisse just kind of goes right in there and goes for it, but he's also wide. I think he can be had when he's throwing those wide shots. It's going to take a guy to cut the line of attack, intercept it, and land the way Matisse does to other people. Somebody's going to have to do it to him. Provodnikov would be a really good fight, man. That would be
a
style
about,
that could be dangerous.
Right. And here's the thing, too, with Ruslan, is you think of all the opponents from Danny Garcia, even like Adrian Broner, down the line of 140 candidates. You know, Adrian Broner's not 140. He's not in the 140 sweepstakes or anything. But you think of these guys, okay, out of all of them, who could take the punch? Ruslan, I think he could take it. I don't know. There's something about him that has, like, that expression that he could take.
I agree.
He did, though, get hurt.
Oh, he did.
With Timothy Bratt. You know?
He did get hurt, but it was that kind of Chinese water torture as I kept going. He also hit it well. It would be interesting to see how he takes Matisse's punch. I mean, Matisse's punch is kind of otherworldly, but that right hand of Provodnikov's is no slouch, and the body punching, it would be – that was the thing with Lamont, is once you got hit with that left, you could tell that there was like a inner turmoil there. He wanted to go back to boxing, but that wasn't working because he was getting tagged trying to get back to range. And then he tried to go into the center of the storm, which, like Joe Goosen always says, it's actually – safer in there than being on the outside sometimes. You can kind of hide and smother a guy's punches and kind of move around him quickly and negate what he's doing. But he went in there, and that wasn't really working, and then he just got knocked out.
Right.
Provodnikov is like a nice mid-range fighter. He likes being there. So it'd be interesting to see would he abandon that and desperately try to downshift into something else.
It's a moment of truth, to tell you the truth. It's whether – this is the whole thing. It's one of those matches. It's either going to end early or it's just going to be a Corrales-Castillo fight all the way down until somebody's will is finally broken. Not broken, where their will is their worst enemy, where the ref has to step in and say, okay, enough is enough. If anyway, like the Brandon Rios and Mike Alvarado fight, we all were saying, like, this is fight of the year type of material. Ruslan and Lucas, that's got fight of the year written all over it. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. And then a little later, we're going to be calling in our next guest here on Leaving the Ring. Let's take in some callers. Let's say, let's hear what your guys' opinion. What you think about Ruslan and Lucas getting in, you know, getting in and in. Seeing those guys get in the ring and see if they leave it in the ring. I just kind of assume that they definitely would. Let's go with, let me see, area code 818. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
What up, fellas? It's your boy, Josh. What's going on, guys?
What up, big dog? How you doing?
Man, doing good, man. Just living that Vegas life.
You kind of threw me off right now because, you know, normally you come in, you say, yo, this is Josh, the big tree.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little tired. Just got off work, man, so.
So what's your thoughts, brother? What do you think?
First of all, man, I feel like I know a little bit of Russian after that interview. That was pretty, I got that Rosetta Stone right there. And that's a hell of a matchup. I agree what you said, too. It could be either, like, a quick fighter is going to be one of them classic, you know, brawl for all type of fights like Castillo Corrales or even like your Rios Alvarado. It's interesting because we don't, you know, we keep saying, can Matisse, you know, can he take a punch? We haven't, has he been tested as far as his chin? But can Provokhanov take a hard punch that is perfectly placed like Matisse can do? I mean, Matisse looks like he hurts people's hands when they block it. Like, it makes you scared to even block the shot. So, it's a hell of a fight. Matisse, he keeps winning me over and over and over. Like, I keep on trying to go against him because I feel like someone's going to outbox him. But he just looks like he keeps improving. He's not he's like when Alvarado and Rios fought the second time. When everyone
like
thinks
that
Alvarado's going to – what happened?
You made a great point. He's like almost like that. That date you take out and you're like, this is just way too perfect. There's no way. You're looking for the flaw. You know what I mean? You're looking for something
right.
That's going to go, okay, it was too good to be true. I'm with you on that with Lucas Matisse, where I want to be sold, but I'm still very reserved with them. I'm not sure if I want to be on that Matisse train yet. You know,
yeah.
I even though with the Lamont Peterson stoppage, I still want to see more from him. You know, same thing with Ruslan, you know, where
exactly.
Great fight with Timothy Bradley. But with Timothy, it's almost in the same breath with Lamont Peterson. Did they fight their fight? Was it really because they went in with a dumb game plan?
Exactly.
You know, Timothy Bradley wanted to go in there and bang, even though he's not a banger. And Lamont was almost on the road of being a boxer, but as soon as he got hurt, He went into what happened with him and Victor Ortiz. Got dropped again, and he fought his way out of being dropped. This time it just didn't work.
Yeah, and one thing with Matisse, what he keeps telling me on now is, just to use Rios and Alvarado as a perfect example. With Rios Alvarado in the second one, we saw Rios do what Rios does, only have one game plan, is to go in and bang. And Alvarado, he proved that he had multiple game plans. He can bang, he can move, he can box, get out of the way. That's what Matisse has shown me, is that he can come in with multiple game plans. He's not a one-shot pony. He doesn't have one trick, which is just a bang. I think Matisse is smart enough to have game plans, and that is something provocative to me. I'm not sold on yet. I think he's still a green fighter where he might not be able to have multiple game plans. His game plan is, look, I'm going to hit you. I'm going to take some hits. So I'm going to hit you harder. For every time you hit me, I'm going to hit you two times, three times harder. And I think against Matisse, who I think is starting to get a little bit, he's developing a lot more skill than just rock and sock him type fighting in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it, you know, and I said this last week, he's a student in the game. He's improving with every fight. Ruslan is one of those fighters you get, you know, what you see is what you're going to get. But that's what makes him exciting, you know?
And definitely. I'm never going to – and now I'm going to stop picking against guys who do their own tattoos, because you're a badass if you can do that.
Yeah, no doubt. I still disagree on the Ruslan tip. I think he kind of said it. He said it pretty succinctly that in the fight he kind of forgot how he had his success. He got those. He hurt Bradley early, and he thought it was over. You know, and he rushed it, and he went a little crazy. And I think that got him into that mode where he just turned into a stalker who throws one punch. But I think I look at that fight before, and even a lot of moments in the Bradley fight, he's got a lot more dimensions than people give him credit for. I don't think we've seen the best of him. And now that we're getting to see him at the elite level, like we've had a chance to look at Lucas at the elite level for a little while, gauge him against Judah, Alexander, and now Peterson. But we had, Dallas was kind of just a guy, it turned out to be.
Right.
And just kind of a road bump, if you will. That's what he turned out to be. It's a bummer for him, but it was fun for the round that we saw. But with Ruslan, he's just barely arrived at that level with the Pacquiao sparring, which seemed to garner him some attention, and he had the nice fight afterwards, and now he's got this Bradley fight. I think in a few more fights we'll be able to kind of fully gauge just where he is. I think he does have some room to grow. He swells like a mofo, and he does get into a mode where he takes too many shots. His defense isn't as good as Matisse's. But Matisse, I haven't seen him fully deep in a fight where somebody's putting a hurting on him. You know, Zab made things tricky for him, so did Alexander, but they weren't, like, really asking questions that I think a guy like Ruslan will. So that's going to be an interesting dimension to see going forward. It's exciting right now, though. Punchers are back. For a while, it was like lefties. Now it seems like punchers, like raw punchers are back. Golovkin, Matisse, Ruslan Provodnikov, these guys are – this is what it's all about. This is why we watch. This is why I watch, anyway.
It's why boxing's having another pretty decent year again. I mean, the fights are starting to be exciting again. I mean, we're going to get that one or two, three boring fights, a year that we expect. Now we're starting to get those exciting fights. Like, man, I can't wait. Hey, forget DVR. I watch it live, man. I'm not trying to watch it later or find out what happens on Twitter. No, I need to watch it right now.
Yeah, I like no spoilers. Yeah, it has, because being a boxing writer and Dave and I watch a lot of fights, and it can get into like a job mode. I hate to say that, but it's like, dude, and especially if you hear, a fight was boring and you know who won, and you still got to watch it because you got to talk about it. It's the worst. But even knowing, because I didn't get to see Jones Lebedev live, I had to watch it later. But man, what a great fight that was. I mean, that was just kind of under the radar, and it's a fight of the year candidate, no question. Fight after fight, it just seems like this weekend, we haven't even gotten to breaking it down, but Frotch versus Kessler 2, I mean, if nothing was really happening around it, that's a really, really good fight. I don't know what's up with boxing, but I like it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you guys, what you thought about that fight coming up, man. I think that's going to be I'm going with Frotch, but man, I wonder if Kessler can just work on that amazing jab he's shown in all his past fights. It's going to be a good fight. I don't know. I'm going with Frotch, though. I can't go against Frotch.
You can't go against him at home. That's the hard part. And you look at Kessler. It's hard to say when a fighter's at his best, because when is he at his best? When he's in his physical prime? Or is he at his best when maybe he's a little bit longer in the tooth, but he's got experience? He's maybe been screwed over a couple times, or he's had a couple close losses, and now he knows what he needs to do in order to get over the hump. It's hard to say. And you look at these two guys. I don't think I've ever written this much about just one fight, with the exception of the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, which never happened. I've written a couple articles. I'm actually writing a third for tonight because Carl got me he got me his quotes after my article came out. I went up against deadlines. I was like, dude, I got to print, and I got the quotes this morning. So I'm just going to put them out. And he kind of talks a little bit about the progression. They're both having their first rematch in this fight, which I find interesting. So they're both kind of having to go over retread. I think Frotch has more room to grow. Watching that fight, and I've watched it a couple times now again, the more I watch it, the more clear it's a Kessler win to me. A lot of people kept saying, well, if that was in England, it would go to Frotch. And maybe if you're looking at the last three rounds, maybe it's a little tight early on, I guess. You could say that. But really, the fight is dictated by Kessler's boxing, his explosiveness off the back foot, and his ability to land with the straight punches, particularly the middle of the target. He kind of made a decision that, you know, the Cobra, Frotch, is going to be awkward and move, and he's going to keep touching you with that long jab. And the reach, Kessler said, you know, was that he said it was a problem. He kind of underestimated it. It was longer than he realized. But he started placing a right hand underneath that jab constantly, and eventually the jab went away as much as a dominant weapon for Frotch, except in spots. And he just stayed down the center line and was busier. Now, he tired out in the back end, and, you know, he could have been stopped if Frotch had really dug into the body earlier on. So it's going to be little adjustments, I think, that have happened. But I think something people don't really talk about heading into this fight is that Jimmy Montoya had been in Kessler's camp a few times before in different capacity. But now, in that first fight, he was the lead trainer for the first time with Frotch. And then they took that long break to let his eye heal. It healed. And then they've been on a three-fight knockout streak. So they've had time to kind of get together, know each other beforehand. Now they're fully committed to working together in tandem with him as a lead trainer. And look at the results. I mean, okay, the guys, you know, Budla and Alan Green and McGee, they're not the next tier. You know, McGee looks like an old businessman, but he's a serviceable fighter. And each time, Kessler was very, very impressive in stopping them, particularly the Alan Green knockout, where he's kind of drifting to his left, and he kind of leaps forward explosively, but it's not a huge leap. It's very economical, the motion, and knocks Alan Green out with a single left hook. That doesn't travel very far. Kessler is very dangerous in this fight. Either that, or they're hiding him at the second level and kind of eking out money, waiting for a big cash-out rematch like this against Frotch, and he's not. And there's a reason he's at the second level. I tend to think they kind of saved his career, got him some wins. He's only had 13 rounds of the 40, I think, six rounds that Frotch has had in between, and losing one-sided to Ward and then the Butte blowout. It's an interesting fight with a lot of angles, and it's hard to pick. You know, is there matchmaking illusion going on, or is this guy kind of having a resurgence at the end of his career in Kessler? Was Butte just a mirage, and we're making too much out of that win? Was he killing himself to make the weight? What was going on in that fight? Or is Frotch just that good? I mean, how can a guy turn around from being dominated by a one-handed Andre Ward to blowing out Lucien Butte in the next fight? So a lot of things going on in this fight, right?
Yeah, there is. And you know what? Really, some really great points here. But let me... I'm going to take it back what you were saying with, you know, Mikhail Kessler being the better boxer. Obviously, he is the better boxer. I think with, you know, you match him up with any 168, you're always going to think he's the better boxer. He's got a great jab, knows how to use his range. But somewhere down the line in this Super 6, I think Carl Frotch kind of lost himself, where the Carl Frotch with the rawness of the guy, you know, really,
yeah, I agree with you.
With Jermaine Taylor, you know, where the guy just tried to land big shots and try to get you out of there. I think he got lost in that whole mix where he believed he needed to be a better boxer. He kind of forgot that I got here by being me. With the Lucien Butte fight, I believe he found himself again. That he had to go back and reevaluate himself and go, you know what? What was missing? Like, what happened here? I thought that the reason why he lost with Kessler, the reason why he lost with Ward was because he tried to be a boxer, and that's not him. He's not a boxer. He's a fighter. That's the same thing where you were mentioning earlier about Floyd Mayweather. That's a pure boxer. He's the best boxer in the world, but Manny Pacquiao is the best fighter in the world. And that's where Frost has got a category, put himself in that category, is you're never going to be the best boxer. You're never going to outbox a Kessler or a Ward, but you can outfight them. Big difference.
Yeah, and to guys that are more brawlers, with his awkward style, because he's such a unique style, Frotch, and he knows how awkward and weird he is, and he uses it. And even Kessler talked about it. It was like it was hard for him to describe it, but he kept going back to that I thought his left was shorter than it was. And it's because Frotch faces you like a fencer. He turns almost completely sideways, keeps that lead shoulder right at you. So he's a skinny target, and he gets the most out of his reach, which is already long at 75 inches. And now he's just popping you with that jab, and it's just always there. It's kind of a range finder. His guard seems kind of open. His hands seem a little bit low. But really, he's just trying to get you to come in, and he lands some funky uppercut or right hook to the head or the body. He's a weird guy. I agree with you, Dave. You know, he can be a boxer with certain styles, but I think that maybe it was the Durrell fight where he tried to match boxing skill and kind of got out of getting into a fight. It was a little rough and tumble, and it was almost like he had something to prove after that. And I agree with you again that he had nothing to prove after that. It was just a style matchup, and he needed to go back to being who he is in order to be successful. And that's exactly who he needs to be in this, because the guy with the better and lighter toes, you know, the better footwork, is Mikel Kessler in this fight. I don't care if he's long in the tooth or not, or has taken more damage. He's well-rested. He's coming off three short-round fights where, you know, they weren't complete blowouts. He had to work for it, and he worked really well, and he blew those guys out. And so I think, you know, I think Frotch is going to have to go in there and punch him in the mouth, knock him off rhythm, not let him get into a boxing mode, and make this thing a fight, or he's going to have some problems.
If anything, he's got to look at how Ward beat Kessler, which is being close, smother him, and
hit him
be
with
the aggressor.
Your head.
Yeah, you know, be the aggressor. And it always goes back, you know, where the boxer is always going to outbox you. If you go in knowing that's going to happen, like even with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, I think he, after the second, third round, he just kind of threw that out the door. He wanted to try to match him, speed. They believed they were faster than him. When you start believing something that really it's not there, you've never had it before, that's when you become in default. That's when you start believing your own bullshit so much that the reality never kicks in. Carl Frotch has got to get that through his head, is that, hey, listen, I was good at one thing. You know, I was born with one thing, and that was to be a fighter. I wasn't born to be a polished guy. I wasn't born to have great footwork. I wasn't born to have great boxing skills. I was born to go in, get hit, not get hit. You know what I mean? There's no Sugar Ray Robinson here. You know, hit without getting hit. You're going in, you're going to get hit. You're going to go in with the Jake LaMotta mentality. I'm going to get hit, but I'm going to land one of my big ones to turn this fight, to sway this fight in my favor. That's what Carl Frotch has got to be. You know, they call him the Cobra for a reason. Be a Cobra. Because he's been a garden snake for some time.
Yeah, he's going to have to stop with the boxing. I think, you know, it's all about identity in this. And I think, too, with Jimmy Montoya, he keeps saying, you know, like Kessler, we haven't seen the best of him. And there was a lot of things he always wanted to do. I remember doing this interview right before the lead-in to all the media hype for the first fight. And Jimmy had talked about that he felt that this guy had tremendous ability and had not, because they had kept him where they were kept him, you know, in Denmark, he was just kind of fighting guys he could beat. Maybe his growth had been stunted. And, you know, like the caller earlier that was talking about Danny Garcia should leave his dad, and I was saying, no, I don't think so. I have to say that he shouldn't add people to the team and see things in a different way. You just don't unplug everything, especially when you're still winning. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all.
But to add somebody, sure, I'm all for that. I think it's all about adding people to the team and doing things in a different way. In this case, you know, I don't know. It's such an interesting fight. I think that the what Jimmy brought to his table, you know, just looking at Kessler over the last few fights, it's not much different. I think the back foot is a little bit more is placed a little bit different at times, where you can tell if he's going to launch. He's got a tremendous jab. It's almost like a lead punch, and he's always kind of done this where he faces that back foot towards you and explodes off of it. I noticed that he stays in that posture a little bit more, Kessler, and it enables him to kind of move forward, back, and side to side a little bit quicker. He doesn't have to shift that foot and then do it. It's already in place. It also makes those motions, the punches, that much more explosive when you're shooting off the back foot like that. And you're kind of launching yourself forward, and you're turning that jab into like a spear that's just hammering into somebody. And I think, too, his guard is tightened a little bit. it's raised just a little bit to guard the top of the head, and it's a little more compact all the time. As you saw in the first fight, particularly when they get the ninth round, Kessler's technique kind of went out the window, and he was just fighting on instinct after a while. He's bleeding, really tired, and Frotch.
I think age has got – there's something there, you know.
Well, I think he was kind of tight, and he expended a lot of energy in the beginning of it.
Using a jab, I mean, you know, use the jab for four rounds. If you're not conditioned with that jab, I mean, it takes a lot out of you.
And I think, too, it was just like – at least this is the impression I got, was that because Frotch is so weird, you're a little bit tighter and tense because you're way on your guard. You're not just, like, aware.
Right.
You're tight. But he also was like, he threw a lot more punches early on, just trying to tame the guy. Like, all right, I can't figure him out, but like, at least I'm not going to let him do whatever the hell he's trying to do and bide some time. And I think this time around, like he said, there's a roadmap now. I'm not just like kind of cutting my way through the darkness. I actually know where I need to go and what I want to do. So it's an interesting fight. And I don't know. We're not really at the pick point of the show, but screw it. I'm picking Kessler. I just got a feeling.
Picking Frotch, you know, I think that these are my things with Mikel Kessler right now. There's two things that sometimes that concern me a little bit. One is age. The second one is definitely sometimes he can be too conservative with himself. Is that you, Gabriel? He can be a bit too conservative with his punches, with his style, and he can kind of get himself lost in that zone. And that's where he tires out a little bit. He's trying to be a little bit too perfect. Gabe, are you there? I think Gabe was there messing around with his earphones again and stuff, so it's interfering.
Sorry about that. That's something to kind of disconnect. Sorry about that.
Okay. No problem. So I'll go back to what I'm saying. Sometimes it interferes with himself trying to be a little bit too perfect. He can concentrate a little bit on that. And to me, too, even though Carl Frotz can be awkward, I think what happens with some fighters, because, you know, myself, when I concentrate on something just too much, I get fatigued with it. I tighten up. I try to make it look better than what it should be, rather than it just let it flow. And fighting and boxing is all in one, where you got to let it flow. You got to be relaxed. You got to be calm. You got to breathe correctly. And with Kessler, sometimes, even when he fought like Joe Calzaghe, there was a lot of, you know, he was tensed up. You could see the muscles.
Yeah.
There was just really, really tensed up. And that's something to me, I don't know if anybody has ever pointed this out, but there's something to me that I see that he's always had some difficulties with, is to relax in the ring.
Well, yeah, he's kind of always been a little bit hyper as a fighter, a little bit tense. And that's kind of something I noticed that's not gone, but he's still on his guard. But it's something they talk about, like at least my old Sifu would talk about, having like a tight but not tense guard, you know, so that it's firm enough that if something comes in, you can kind of tighten it and parry or block. But, you know, it's not so tight that you're tiring yourself out and you're tensing up, you know. And I think, you know, it's the difference between traveling somewhere and you have a vague indication of maybe where you're going and you're perhaps a little bit lost. So there's a tension there that kind of eats away at you versus knowing exactly where you're going, or at least having, you know, directions there. Maybe you've never been there before, but you know how to get there. And I think that's going to be the difference with Kessler. And I noticed it in the last few fights, these last three fights under Jimmy Montoya, in that he's still boxing the way he used to. There's little tiny adjustments, but he does seem relaxed. I mean, that move that he pulled on Alan Green, and again, it's Alan Green, but not everybody just knocks him cold with a little left hook that kind of bursts 6 feet out or 6 inches out.
How much of it was Alan Green, though? I mean, I don't know.
The little moment was, you know, it was
right.
Like a jab, and he kind of drifted to his left, and Alan was kind of in place, and boom, he exploded. I mean, like I said, it's still Alan Green, but still, it was a very relaxed manner in which the way he exploded. It was even seemed like less energy than the knockout by Martinez over Paul Williams. You know what I mean? It wasn't like this leaping thing. It was a quick burst. I don't know if that tension's gone, but again, it's, you know, we won't know until we see them in there. And you see a guy that's been fighting at Division 2 perhaps Division III versus a guy that's fighting, you know, top level guys. But again, Arthur Abraham, I mean, dude, I mean, the wheels just came off the wagon in that tournament. You know, everybody kind of throws that one up there, and everybody else kind of goes, yeah, he did. He was Arthur Abraham entering that tournament, but I mean, everybody got a hold of that guy in that tournament.
It's funny. Mikael Klesser was one of the favorites, and so was Arthur Abraham. And Arthur definitely just kind of rolled off. He didn't, you know, crash on freeway. He fell all out of the freeway.
Dude, I mean, it was just brutal. Like, dudes ran up, started taking the wheels off and the hubcaps. They pulled the radio out. It was bad.
Yeah.
And
but you know, found out what he was.
Like, yeah, like Frotch says, like, he hasn't fought anybody, and I okay, I'll give him that. Since Frotch, he hasn't fought anybody of serious note. But granted, I mean, you know, Brian McGee did pick up that title, an interim version, and he lifted it off of him. He'd fought some people. It's still not the greatest one. I'm not blown away by it. But here's the other thing, too, is that Kessler, he knocked out McGee to the body. He knocked out Green to the head. Two different punches, a straight right to the body and the left hook to the head. He's mixing things up. And it's sometimes not who you beat, but how you beat them. And it wasn't like he was Shane Mosley struggling with Cano and having to gut it out. He kind of cruised and dominated and used his skills. They fought the same guy, and I thought Kessler was a little more competitive with Ward than Frotch, who looked kind of lost. And that was the freshest version of Ward.
I don't know.
But he faced, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know?
I just keep going back and looking at what are you more impressed with, Kessler stopping Green or the way Frotch stopped Butte? I'm just more impressed with this Butte stoppage than I am with Green.
But see, you know, I was also saying the whole time I didn't know much about Butte because he never left, you know, his home confines. And as soon as he did, he got blown out. It almost kind of confirmed how I felt about Butte more than anything. But I also felt that at 68, he'd been killing himself. And I'd heard this from guys close to the camp for years. So, I mean, I hate to take it away from a guy because it was pretty spectacular what he did. He brutalized him. But at the same time, I just kind of wonder, you know, what was Butte's move immediately after? It wasn't to get a rematch. It was to move up. You know, that kind of says a lot. So I mean, there's the devil's in the details in this fight. It's interesting because, I mean, you look at the Ward fight, too. Look at who Kessler's lost to. Joe Calzaghe and Andre Ward. Those are clear losses. I mean, I honestly can't make a case that he lost to Carl Frotch. I mean, maybe a draw, but I watched the fight again last night.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even with Carl Frotch, look at who he's lost to. You know, I mean, Andre Ward.
And Durrell, you know, like real, like athletic boxer type.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. And Kessler kind of is not quite that, but not quite not that. You know, he's an aggressive boxer that can you know, punch a bit too.
They're both definitely two guys that can argue their case of oppositions that they have faced. You know, where you got to scratch your head and go, wow, they both got a point here. That's what makes this match really interesting for the both of them. They're going in. I mean, see, this is the thing, too, is that two things happen in a rematch. One, the first time they meet, they just go all balls. The first time they meet, sometimes they're hesitant. They have to sit there and figure each other out. In a rematch, if they met each other and they went all balls, they normally go back in with a rematch going, you know what? We got to know each other. We went on the date and we went a bit too fast. We need to kind of go back up, okay?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Sometimes when you get a guy, when they meet for the very first time, two things can happen. Either they just continue on a boring date, or there's going to be some sparks and some flames between them. I kind of tend to think that they've already got past the 3 months, the three-date rule, and there's going to be some lovemaking in this rematch.
See, I tend to go the other way. I think that Kessler's going to try to keep his knees locked as much as possible. I think he's going to try to keep him out of his pants and be like, no, this is a boxing match. This isn't going to be a fight, because a fight is only going to get the crowd excited. It's going to, you know, it can only be bad, I think, for Kessler to get into a fight. He's got to just go back to what he did the first time. Go out, immediately establish that launching jab, not take that right hand. This was something I kept watching over and over again in the first fight. And it's just fresh in my mind because I watched it like last, like earlier in the week, and then I watched it this last night. And oh shit, Larry O, we got to call Larry O in.
Just really quick too, Big Tree called in, and thanks, B. He's one of our young upcoming writers on Leave the Ring. I just posted up. I keep telling him I'm gonna post it up, and man, I'm working. I'm getting up at 3 in the morning to head out to work because they're making us work 10-hour days.
He's ready for it.
Yeah.
He's ready for us. Larry just hit me up.
And that's killing me, so I apologize, Josh McDaniel, the Big Tree, one of my favorite writers and my co-host of The Morning Rewalk. So thanks for the call, and I apologize, bro. I wasn't able to get you on a little longer here. We're going to get Larry O with us here.
Man, we were just getting into this fight, just so I don't torture anybody, the thing that really bothered me was that watching Kessler make him miss with that right hand over and over again, just by an inch, and he kind of does it the way you kind of don't want to, by dropping that lead hand and just moving back using reflexes. And as the fight went on, Frotch figured out the range, figured out how to make that land. It'll be interesting to see if time, those 3 years between the fight, has made that little reflex, that if they fix that defect in Kessler. Like, you know, before it was a strength, but I think 3 years later it might be a little bit of an opening and a problem. Have they fixed that, or is he going to have that same old habit of just relying on his reflex to make that right hand miss? That's a big key as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
Is the number working?
But I'm still going to go. I'm typing it in. It's a long number, dude.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Carl Frotch, man. I think that he gets it done. All right, hold on. Let me see if I can get it in like this. Get him on. We're going to be calling in Larry O. He's got a bit of an exclusive here for leaving.
That hurts my ears so much.
I know.
Yeah. You like to hurt me. For those not familiar with him, Larry Alubamowo is a British boxer, heavyweight, who had been suspended last year during the whole spate of drug cases that were going on throughout the U.S. But over there, he'd been involved in a UCAD case. UCAD had caught him through a drug sting that the DEA out here was working. Long story short, come around to this year, and I guess he's helped UCAD locate with some intelligence about a boxer that was trying to either procure PEDs or had, and so they've lowered his suspension, and Larry's coming on to talk to us about it.
As soon as I can
dial it in.
There it is right there. Okay, I got it. So, figured it out here. Let me
Boy, just looking at this, speaking of the Guillermo Jones fight, I'll just filibuster while you're working out the number. What's wrong?
It says, hold on, let me do it again. All right, hold on. Go ahead and say what your thought was right now while I'm working out, trying to get him on here on Leave the Ring.
Just looking at this Guillermo Jones-Dennis Lebedev fight, man. Jones finishes it off in the 11th dramatic fight. Hell of a fight. I mean, both guys just would not let up throughout the whole thing. I mean, Lebedev showed just incredible courage. His corner, I thought it was just incredibly questionable to let him go on with that eye. I don't know what the ref was thinking, what the ringside doctor was thinking, what the corner was thinking, because it was just, that eye was just flat out ridiculous.
Hello?
Hello, can I please speak to Larry?
This is Larry.
Larry, what's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas and Mr. Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Hey, thanks for staying up. If you can chop it up here with us on Leaving the Ring Radio.
Yeah. No, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure, man.
So, Larry, we heard the story that is broken regarding the boxer Craig Windsor. What can you talk to us about? Can you speak to that case at all? They said that you'd basically been involved somehow providing information, and because of that, they're going to lower your suspension. Can you fill us in on what that is? I know there's probably some certain legal, you know, windows you can't open up, but
yeah. Basically, what it is that law enforcement in this country have a deal with UK anti-doping, where if they come across, because over here, possession of and use of performance-enhancing drugs is not a crime like it is in the States. So if the police or any other sort of organization like Customs comes across an athlete in possession of performance-enhancing drugs, although they can't take action on it, they can inform UK Anti-Doping of that, and they have a deal with UK Anti-Doping. In fact, all the organisations, as I said, like the police and customs and such, have that deal with UK Anti-Doping. Because of this deal, the information on Craig Windsor came to surface. We basically had, after I was banned, he contacted me about substances he was using. And I didn't give him any help on the substances. I told him, look, you shouldn't really be messaging me about this because I've been warned not to help any other athletes. But he kept messaging me anyway. And, the conversation took place over a period of months about what he was planning on doing and what he wanted to know why I did and how it benefited me and so on and so forth. So UK Anti-Doping were privy to these conversations before they even contacted me. And then when they contacted me about them, I said, yes, these did take place, and that you can see from the context of the conversation that I didn't help him at all. So basically, I was told that if I was willing to cooperate, I could have the rest of my ban suspended, which obviously, you know, I agreed to. So I verified and was willing to make representations to the fact that, yes, we did have these conversations, and yes, he did say to me that he used certain substances and was planning on using others in preparation for upcoming fights that he had. And at first he denied it. In fact, he denied it all the way up to his hearing, apparently. And it was on the day of his hearing that he actually admitted it, which prompted him to get such a large suspension. In fact, from what I've heard, it was a story concocted with him and his girlfriend, denying it and saying that his girlfriend sent me the messages and so on and so forth. But I think at the end of the day, they were overwhelmed with the amount of information that UK Anti-Doping had against them, or against Craig, that he had to come clean in the end. So that's basically what happened and what led to me getting my ban suspended.
Do you think, you wouldn't have been in this position? Like, some people will look at you badly on this, and say, well, now he's turning people in.
Yeah.
But he was persistent with you. You weren't, looking to entrap him and say, hey, I can help you out. He kept, how persistent was he?
Oh, he was very persistent, because I did tell him when he first contacted me, when the news broke about my ban, that's when he contacted me. He was a friend of mine on Facebook, and he contacted me, and he was like, I'm also using, and I know loads of people are using, and, you know, kind of like want you to help me out with what I'm using. And I was like, no, I can't do that because I've been warned not to do that. So he was like, okay, that's cool. Then I got another message from him maybe a few weeks later saying the same thing. A few weeks later saying the same thing. And then it went quiet for a while, and then we started chatting about general things, boxing and stuff, and then it just crept in, basically. And we just started talking about the performance enhancing drugs issue, where he didn't actually ask for my help, but he was just mentioning what he was doing and what I've heard of a certain product and what do I think of his protocol and things of that nature. So then he didn't directly ask me for any more help, but he was just filling me in on what he was doing, basically.
So Larry, let me ask you this. The guy's being persistent. The first thing that comes to my thought is, why didn't you unfriend this guy? Like, why didn't you just not block him and just kind of move on from there? Why keep him as a friend? Why carry on with a conversation with him with something that obviously you didn't want to give him any info about?
Well, because he wasn't being nasty about it. He was being a friendly person. So, you know, there was no reason for me to unfriend him.
But he was obviously asking you about something that you were warned not to talk about. If I'm being asked something over and over, which I'm on Facebook or on Twitter, and there's two things that you can do. One is the op is you stop responding back to the person or you block them. I always go for the first option, which is not respond.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, though. I think this is an interesting situation because it's not, you know, some people might say this is hypocritical because I'm critical of Memo Heredia, who was a guy that dealt drugs to people, and then when he got caught, he just flipped on the people that trusted him, the people he was dealing drugs to. And I have something of a problem with that. But in this case, I mean, one, the guy just failed an IQ test. I mean, why would you go to Larry, who got caught by UCAD and in connection with the DEA? It was very public, and you keep asking him for drugs, and he keeps saying no. It seems like the guy kind of got what he paid for. But two, this isn't baseball. This is boxing, and I think – I don't know, Larry, I guess we'll ask you the question. I mean, do you think you got to turn a guy in? Because what he was looking for was anabolic steroids, two very specific ones, stanozolol, which is a strength builder, and the other one's name I'm going to screw up. But, what are your thoughts there? Was it a moral issue for you? Was it also just part of
it? See, this is the thing. It wasn't even the case of me turning him in. It was a case of they contacting me, telling me that they had this information. So this is what a lot of the – because I've been reading a lot of what the guys on Twitter have been writing, calling me a
graft.
Gotcha. And so on and so forth. But that wasn't the case. And, you know, that's why sometimes the human race just baffles me because we create our own problems. Without having any – not privy to all the information, they name me a graft straight away, you know.
Right.
When they, you know, which is – I mean, if I actually cared about what they thought, it would upset me, but I don't, so – but basically they had the information.
What information, though, Larry? Just really quick for our listeners.
They had the conversation on Facebook, basically.
How did they get that? How did they obtain a conversation?
Like I said, if law enforcement in this country, basically, if you read about Craig Windsor Jr., you will know that he's not the nicest of guys. In fact, his whole family involved in a lot of dodgy stuff. So I can't go into a lot of details, as you well know. But
right, but okay, so...
So they were looking at him from, like, many different
angles.
Right,
they were looking... So basically, law enforcement were looking at him for something else.
Right.
Came across this, and there you go.
And his persistence basically screwed him.
Basically, yeah.
Wow.
But you know, some listeners, and even like, you know, so like you mentioned right now, like Twitter, they're going to look at it as, well, you're an opportunist. You jumped on something that can get you ahead. Where do you? It goes back from the first time we did the interview. Where's the morals at? And that's how listeners are going to look at. I kind of see where you're coming from, but I got to ask you that question because that's what's going to be on everybody's mind is that. Okay, Larry, when does morals kick in? Even though you know that this guy was persistent, did it never cross your mind like, hey, listen, I got in trouble already once. I'm not going to get in another mix, even though it could benefit me, but there's got to be a stance in something.
But, you see, this is the thing. I did nothing wrong at all. is all it is for me is to, because basically they were going to put a case against this guy regardless whether I verified that this, he sent me this information.
But you got something out of it, though. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
sorry.
He was saying that you got something out of it, but I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, it happens all the time in sport. You know, why shouldn't I get something out of it? You know, he's going to be done. It goes back to what I was saying when I first got the ban, that, you know, and a lot of people decided not to believe me, but I think they can see since my ban all the people being caught for performance-enhancing drugs and all the people being associated, like, for instance, Gamboa, and nothing's going to happen to him, by the way, we all know that. All these people being associated or being caught with performance-enhancing drugs proves my point that it's rife in the sport. And people didn't want to believe me at first. They thought it was just Larry, you know, having sour grapes and so on and so forth. But I've been vindicated since then. And this is another vindication. Do you know what I mean? This is how I see it, because everyone always wants to point the finger at, oh, Larry's the only one doing it. Larry's the only one doing it. But it isn't the case, you know. And another thing is that I can look at it morally and think, well, I didn't give this guy up. He gave himself up. And so if he is giving himself up and I can benefit from it, why not? You know, at the end of the day, it's an individual sport. This ain't a team sport, you know. And I didn't put him in it. He put himself in it.
That's, you know.
And it's a human reaction, too. I mean, I think that what you did is obviously, you know, like you said, it's not a team sport. It's an individual sport. And it just boils down to, you know, we're born alone and we're going to die alone. So we got to get ourselves to a position where, because nobody's going to get us there. So we got to do it on our own, right?
Yeah. I mean, it'd be different if I gave the information, but it's not like that.
But it's not going to be different for some people, though, Larry. Let's be realistic here. Some people are going to look at it as, you know what, it doesn't matter. You ratted out the guy. And that's basically what it comes down to, whether or not he gave himself up.
You see, this is why I'm glad that I've got the thick skin that I've got, and those people's opinion doesn't mean squat to me. I'm sorry to be like that, but that's put it this way: if I live my life worrying about what every little thing that they thought of me, you know, and I try to live to everyone's ideal, then my life wouldn't be worth anything. I can't really be looking at what everyone is going to be thinking of me. As long as what I think of me and what my friends think of me and what my family think of me is good, that's all I care about. Because the public, for the most part, can be very fickle. I was everyone's best friend until the ban came up. Then I was a cheating so-and-so. People forgot about the fact that I'm a nice guy and I'm very cordial with everyone. Everyone seems to forget about that and were just calling me all sorts of disgusting names.
Right.
You know. So, you know, it just made me realize that no matter how nice you are with a lot of people, it doesn't really matter. So,
yeah.
For the most part, those people who want to think that I'm a grass or this, that, and the other, their opinions mean less than nothing to me. And I'm gonna do what I need to do, and I'm gonna live my life how I need to live it.
To point this out too, really quick, before Gabriel Rosa with his question and stuff, man, is that we love you on this show. Every time the times you've came on, you've been so, you know, very open and honest with us, and that is one thing that, you know, it's hard to do, especially in your position. You know, with the criticism, I don't even know if you want to call it criticism. I don't know. When you say thick skin, dude, I think you're probably layered with five layers of skin, because some folks, you wouldn't be able to handle that, you know?
Oh, dude, yeah. I imagine the storm has been... I'm curious, what have you been doing since all that went down, and how has it been? I know you do a bit of acting and you were looking at other options, writing a book perhaps. How have you been getting along, and how have you been weathering the storm?
Basically, just training. I've not stopped training ever since. I'm a gym rat anyway. I think lots of people know that. So I've been training. I've been training other people. I've been getting into personal training. Just been doing, you know, bits and pieces of security work. I was working on a book, but I'm going to leave that till later on, because I think the Larry O'Bannerwell story... It's still plenty of chapters left in that. just trying to work my way back into the sport, which I'm now, you know, just been planning and strategizing, basically seeing what fights, you know, would be out there and stuff like that, and yeah, just keep myself occupied.
You know, it's interesting with. I'm really curious about this because your case, you're such a unique case just because your college background and the way you were able to circumvent the system. But Craig Windsor is not, you know, people say Craig Windsor Jr. and you're like, who? You know, he got banned and nobody really knows him. He's 9-2, 2 knockouts. He's been knocked out once. Do you think this is a bit of UCAD trophy hunting? I know they were looking at him maybe for other things, but I mean, at the top level, it doesn't seem, I mean, there more and more fighters are volunteering, but it doesn't seem like the commissions are lowering their TE ratios, adding CIR, all the things that you know would catch guys that were doing the things you were doing or test for EPO every time. Do you think this is a bit of a dog and pony show on some level?
With regards to this, no, I wouldn't, because I think when it comes to, I can only speak for UK anti-doping, but when it comes to UK anti-doping, I really do think that they are trying their best to eradicate doping from sports. And a lot of people don't realize that there's also a funding issue with regards to how many tests can be done, what sort of tests can be done,
right,
and so on and so forth. So it's not as easy as saying, oh, you know, test everyone and do these sort of tests, do a CIR test and do this, and test for EPO. A lot of what they do is intelligence-based as well. And so also, and I like to bring that up because a lot of people, I'm not going to mention any names, but there's certain cases where a lot of people thought the guy was treated harshly, and people need to understand that a lot of it is intelligence-based, and just because they're not privy to all the information doesn't mean that that person doesn't deserve that ban. I'll just leave that out there. I think you guys will probably figure out who I'm speaking about, but I'll leave it at that. But but I don't think it's a dog and pony show for these guys. I think they are. I mean, if they do happen to nab a top guy, they will put them through the mill as they have me or Craig Windsor or anyone.
At least they ban people, right?
Yeah,
We don't even ban people.
Exactly. or if you do, I mean, the Michael Bay case was ridiculous. I mean, one of the biggest ever recorded testosterone levels, and he gets 3 months and a fine. I mean, if they offered me that when I got banned, I'd be like, hey, no problem. I'll do that stand on my head. You know, that wouldn't even be an issue for me.
His case is interesting in that I do feel like these TRT clinics, this one in particular just had problems like weeks after, I think because of his case, they've had like non-medical personnel prescribing medicine, giving out this testosterone. I'm thinking it's a testosterone shake of some kind, some sort of cocktail that they give in a shot. And Mickey is an interesting guy. I've gotten to know him. And he's one of those guys that won't even take aspirin, doesn't like medicine, likes kind of home remedies. And at least, you know, this is his point of view, and I'm still looking into the case. Went to the doctor for the first time. They gave him these shots, said everything was fine. There was no PEDs in it. I think we're finding more and more with these TRT cases that's the case. It's similar to Lamont Peterson. But you're right. At the same time, you're responsible for what goes in your body. And 3 months and a little bit of a fine compared to what you guys go through, I mean – it does seem a little bit ridiculous. Let me ask you this:
If he was based in Britain, if he was licensed by the British Boxing Border Control, the least he would have got was 2 years. That's the least he would have got.
They wouldn't do the norm, no harm, no foul, because you didn't know rule we do here.
No, the least he would have got was 2 years, and the reason why he doesn't get that sort of sanction is because most, if not all, of the American boxing commissions do not follow the WADA the WADA code.
No, they don't.
You know, they don't. So they're not obliged to hand down the mandatory sanctions.
If they don't test for everything, and they also don't adhere to the no needle policy. you know, guys are able to inject with IVs and rehydrate after the weigh-in, and that's against WADA code. You're not allowed to do that. You're supposed to do it natural. Anything injectable, unless you have a TUI for it, is against the code. Let me ask you this too. You know, there's always the balance of where do you test it, because there's not a lot of money around, like you said, the budget. Some people say, you know, if we're assuming that drugs are rife at the Craig Windsor level, as well as at the top levels where these guys are on TV, like a Mickey Bay gets caught, or some of the other guys, particularly in MMA, you know, some of the bigger names.
Well, Jaylon Love got caught the other day, didn't he?
Right, Jaylon Love as well, with a diuretic.
Mm-hmm.
So do you, you know, there's some people say, well, if you get to the top level, then you absolutely have to be tested. But then there's more money at stake there. So don't you think that would probably be harder to get tested, implemented at that level? Should it begin at the lower level so that you screen guys out right at the beginning of their careers so that they'll go on? What do you do?
Here's the thing. They've got to spread the money around to make sure they test at all levels if that's the plan. If they want to, because I think all the cases since my cases have shown that it happens at all levels. It's not just the top guys doing it. It's all levels. In fact, there's a little known fact, but I'll clue you in on. Dylan White, who was the British boxer who got banned for DMAA, who got 2 years for DMAA, the guy who he fought in his last fight, the Hungarian, Sandor, whatever, actually got caught in the same fight for the anabolic steroid stanozolol, and he was given a 2-year ban. But I'm not sure, because he's fought since, so I'm not sure if Hungary follow the WADA code, because he was able to get a license from somewhere else and fight elsewhere. But that guy's a journeyman. Now, he's a journeyman using anabolic steroids. My point is that it happens at all levels. It doesn't make sense just testing the top guys. It doesn't make sense just testing the lower level guys. It has to be done across the board if they're looking to eradicate doping in sports, or you know, bring it to a minimum, because you will never eradicate it. But it needs to be done, and so the pot of money that they have, the budget that they have, needs to be spread around across the board. From the so-called journeyman to the elite level boxers.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to get into the target testing, like they did with you, where they through intelligence they target tested you, and that's how they got you. And maybe you just target test, but the problem is that the sport's not a league, so not everybody's going to legally agree to be target tested, and so you get into a gray area. Do the sanctioning bodies actually want to do it? You can't imagine target testing somebody a week before a major pay-per-view, catching them and stopping it from happening. So it is. I mean, I there was an interview with one of the founders of WADA this last week, Richard Pound, and he said flat out he doesn't think that people at the top level in the anti-doping organizations want to catch people.
I would agree with that, because let's have a hypothetical scenario where say Canelo, Alvarez, Floyd Mayweather, Pacquiao, Manuel Marquez, who've been caught. That's gonna destroy the sport of boxing. That is gonna destroy the sport of boxing. Now, if you put that across the board, all sports where all the top guys are being caught, it will destroy all sports, and then people will look at the sport and will either have two views on it. They'll either have the view of, well, let them use what they will use and I'm still going to watch it, or, oh, they're all cheating so-and-sos, I'm not going to watch this sport. Now, this this was shown with the whole Spanish Dr. Fuentes case, because they had all the blood bags that could have identified lots of athletes in different sports who were doping were now destroyed. So you were never going to know who these athletes were, even though a lot of us know who they are. We're never going to get confirmation of who they are, and they're never going to be sanctioned because the samples were destroyed, because it will hurt sport in general. So I do believe, and remember, sport is a multi-billion-dollar industry now, you know. So I do believe that on some level, some guys in the doping organizations don't want that to happen. I mean, it's an example of that was also the 84 Olympics, when I think it was 25 American athletes tested positive, and the list was shredded. That list never came to light. And one of those athletes was the so-called great Carl Lewis.
There was another incident in, I believe, the 88 Olympics that I've been told about as well. That was kind of on that massive scale. The cover-ups. People that always kind of look at, and I don't mean to single, well, I do, look at USADA and kind of the black cloud that they've created for themselves in boxing, you know, with the kind of canceled tests and, you know, contracted testing that starts and it stops, rumored false positives or hidden positives, rather, and then the Garcia Morales 2 debacle. People always in boxing that are kind of naive to, and I was one of these people. I'm slowly opening my eyes every day. I read more and more and more. We just got in the mail The Secret Race, Tyler Hamilton's book. Dave, I've got your copy ready. And you look at those things, and like one of my favorite books is Drug, Sport, and Politics by Dr. Robert Voy, who's Floyd Mayweather's doctor and worked on the Olympic Committee. You read those things, and they explain exactly how cover-ups can happen, and it does happen at the top level. And, you know, positive tests get hidden, not every day, but it does happen.
I mean, I'm privy to a few really good sources, and I have – some stories that will never see the light of day because I do not want to get sued.
Right.
But I've heard a lot of stories about what occurred prior to and during the Summer Olympics last year. And they will shock you. They will shock you. But a lot of cover-ups happened. It's what happens. You know, like when I said, sport is big business nowadays, and you know. You can't mess that up, basically.
When you look at, you know, the kind of trophy hunting of these things, these investigations, then you look at, there's two big names in the sport that have historic doping histories, not to be redundant, but Memo Heredia and Victor Conte. What's your take on these guys? I mean, I know Victor pretty well. I've spent some time with him. I tend to be a believer in his anti-doping message, and it seems like he's kind of put his time and his money where his mouth is, in a sense, you know, sponsoring Donaire and just kind of putting the message out. But what are your thoughts on these guys, and do you think that we look at them and really there's probably a bunch of guys we don't know about that are in the sport that may be doing bad things, and we're kind of looking at just at those big names?
Yeah, I think they're both very intelligent guys, and I don't think that they would come back into the sport with all eyes on them, looking to continue what they were doing. I honestly do think that they are promoting clean sport and clean athletes. Victor and Memo. It's a shame that they got this rivalry thing going on Twitter. I respect both guys because they, you know, apart from the PED issue, they know how to get guys in shape, and they're very intelligent guys. They've got a vast amount of knowledge, you know, which can help a lot of athletes. I honestly don't think that they are helping athletes dope or anything like that. But as you said, I do think there are a lot of guys who have taken their old place, should I say, who are, you know, who are now, you know, doing that, and knowing what I know, and obviously having the knowledge that I have, being a pharmaceutical chemist, I know what can be done. I know, you know, so I know that, you know, an athlete can hire a chemist, hire their own personal chemist, and get concoctions of whatever they need, and it you know, they could perform all sorts of tests, and you'll never find it. Indeed, I think Memo's already gone on record saying that there are loads of substances that he's made that USADA still can't test for.
Yeah, he says that. I mean, that's why I do kind of look at them. I get the logic of, like, why come back into the sport and you know, with all eyes on you, but all eyes weren't on him until Conte pointed him out, and he changed his name, and I don't know, I have pretty strong opinions about it just because I've watched the track record of both guys. We did an interview with Conte probably back, what, May or June, early June of 2010, when this all stuff, you know, started really hitting the surface, was that year, early, I think January was when the Pacquiao negotiations with Floyd and the drug testing issue came up. And he's kind of remained consistent. Watching Memo, it's not really the consistent. Looking at that interview where he talked about the undetectables and he called for the legalization of testosterone and IGF-1 and EPO, that was only like 2008, 2009. And I kind of wonder what happened in between that and then like 2011 when he got hired by Marquez to all of a sudden being an anti-doping advocate. I haven't seen any of his fighters tested. I don't know. He kind of spreads a lot of misinformation.
I mean, you can have that view. I mean,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, you can have that because I still hold true to certain views that I have, you know, but at the same time, I've got to understand that I'm in a sport which has rules, and, you know, I break those rules, then I've got to suffer the consequences. So
right.
That's the bottom line, you know, and I understand where you're coming from as well. I can understand that, you know, I think Victor is more transparent, but I guess with Memo, it's until he's, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty, I guess.
Yeah. I agree with that. But with Victor is that he's more transparent because he's willing to talk about it. And, and he's willing to go under the lines of questions to answer them, you know. And, you know, it's that old saying, it's easier to remember the truth than a lie.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, just behavior, because you immediately came on the show right in the thick of when things were breaking for you and did a long interview. And Victor's done the same. Memo actually turned us down. Even before we kind of went at it online, he turned us down and didn't want to be any part of it. He turned down Steve Kim days after we broke the story of who he really was. And looking at those court documents, he keeps saying his name is Hernandez, and nowhere in there, I have to think that the New York Times and the U.S. government would get his name right. Nowhere in there does it say Hernandez. So it's interesting. I don't know, but we could do a whole show about that. I know it's 3:40 in the morning for you, Larry. I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this.
No, it's my pleasure. And you know, to be honest with you, Gabe has been extremely supportive of me. I know Gabe doesn't agree with what happened, you know, what I did. I'll be the first one to say that. But at the same time, and not just Gabe, but all you guys have seen that, you know, there's no consistency with the punishments.
I agree.
Across the board.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And you know, that in a lot of ways I was treated unfairly and made a scapegoat. So that's why I really appreciate all the support that you guys, especially Gabe, you know, have given to me. And you know, it's my pleasure this time to come on and do this interview.
Well, I'll get up early next time. We'll trade you. I'll just stay up. That's what I usually do. But you take care, Larry, and keep in touch. Let us know what you're doing next, and we'll talk soon.
Oh, definitely. You guys take care.
Thanks, bye, Larry. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Bye. Good night.
You know, here's the thing that separates like a Victor Conte and a Larry O, is you know. I said something earlier when we aired in the show. I said the two most hated hosts on boxing radio, and I really meant that because I kind of feel like that we are. You know, there's some people in the business that used to talk to me all the time. Now they just won't even talk to me. You know, it's almost like a walk on by type of situation because we've worked with certain like people in the business where. They used to hit me up and say, hey, can you get this person on? And we've gotten this reputation where we don't hold back. I don't think we've ever, been disrespectful. Even with like Jose Suleiman, it got to a point where when the guy started, you know, coming forth with his type of approach to be aggressive with us, we got aggressive with him.
But it never led down to, you know, F this, F that. We kept it very professional, and we left it like that. But,
yeah,
we've been on the show for, what, 5-6 years? And our reputation is that we're going to ask you real questions. We're gonna you know, probe a little bit, make it uncomfortable. And it's really up to the guests to make the best out of it, which is by saying, hey, this is the truth, and I'm going to stick to it. Or we've had certain guests where you can kind of hear that it takes them a minute to process to give us an answer. And with Larry O, I like Larry O a lot. So I went a little hard on him, because the truth of the matter is that nobody likes a rat. So I had to ask him those questions in order to hear the real answer. And he gave us the real answer. He said, look, I'm human. And
it was...
It's an opportunity. This is not a team sport. This is a solo sport. So I jumped at it. Sue me. Yeah, call me whatever you want. But I was banned. And there was unjust ways that how they were handling other athletes that were being caught, and he was used as a patsy, like he said.
And I think, too, just to the bottom line of it, like the way he explained it, it's not like he went, okay, you guys caught me, and I'm going to wear a wire, and I'm going to entrap this guy, and I'm going to get, you know, all in, you know, lure the guy in. Guy knocked on his door, and then they knocked on Larry's door and said, hey, we've got you talking with this guy. Is this you? Do you want to confirm it? I mean, I guess he could say no, and the case would have gone on, but you know what? The guy wouldn't leave him alone.
I don't know if he could have. You know what? I think this is what...
I think you say yes.
My thought process.
I mean, don't you? I think you say yes.
Oh, yeah. But this is also my thought process, is that here's a guy that got caught, got majorly punished, was taken away his livelihood, gets contacted again by another investigation group that was going after Craig, says, hey, look, we see that you've been talking to this guy. You have an option to help us out, right? I think in Larry O's mind is that, shit, if I don't help him out, what is the consequence? You know, I don't want to be out of support any longer, so I think I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to, you know, seize the opportunity, and of course I'm going to be ridiculed. I'm going to be, you know, the pitchforks and torches are going to come out, but what worse position can I be in it? Where I'm at right now. So I'm just going to go for it. I think that's where he was at. And I don't blame him, you know, because when you have been under investigation and when you have been in trouble and you get a letter from the courthouse, and I'm pretty sure we're all blue collar people here. You know, I'm a blue collar guy. I've been in trouble. Our listeners have been in trouble. And when you think you're clean, when you're caught up in the system and you get a letter from court saying, hey, Mr. Duenas, you need to come to court because of whatever situation, you think of the worst, like, ah, shit. Like, what did I do? What didn't I clear? What didn't I pay? And I think that's where Larry owned. He was 3 times, 10 times in the fold in his position because of what he had done in the past.
I think it was a pretty clear decision. It didn't even – once I knew the details of it, I was like, that doesn't bother me at all. You know, like, that guy got what he deserved. And he was kind of not being very bright about it. And now he got caught, you know. And the penalties over there are harsh, but I think somewhere between their penalties and our penalties, it's the right thing to do. I mean, these guys aren't playing with UCAD, and they're catching guys. He was talking about Dillian White, who's 25-year-old kind of prospect guy, and then the guy he was facing was like a 3-25 fighter that had tested positive before. I mean, and he's 31, like it's, you know, pure journeyman. Not even that, just pure opponent. It's all over the sport, and it's something that we just need to continue to work on. It's not the sky is falling or, you know, zombies are coming to take over the world, but it's just another part of the boxing house that needs to get in order. Larry, as always, just provides great information, man. He's just so it's educational, and also just on a few levels of just learning how to navigate judging people. You know,
right.
Like, and how to treat people. I told him that earlier when we were booking him as a guest, that part of his story is he's teaching people how to be compassionate and how to understand. Like he said, I don't agree with what he did as far as his original crime, but I consider him to be unique, in his education and in his methods, but also that he just kind of, once he got caught, he's a lot like Victor. Okay, I did it, and here's how I did it. This is,
yeah,
this is the whole
no,
thing.
Right,
there's
no
holding back. Yeah, he's just straight up like, okay, you know.
I got caught in the cookie jar. What else do you want?
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of that that movie Dick Tracy. You know, when they slow down the record player, it was me. You know, it was the whole thing, like the guy's, you know, confession. He's just straight up about it, and I respect that. You know, I can respect somebody coming clean. And I was talking with Victor earlier today, actually, and kind of asking him about this whole memo thing, because it is something of a people have turned it into a story. A couple people have given them the platform to memo. I thought horribly so earlier this week, really out of balance, and it's not a very fact-checked article that came out. To know him, I think, honestly, the story of that guy is very much one about forgiveness and also seeing reality for what it is. And it's like when Larry said, I think they're both, you know, coming in. I understand that premise of coming into the sport not wanting to screw up again after you've screwed up. But you also have to look at the way they did, when they did in their careers. Victor had a long career, and then he kind of churned for a brief period and turned back. And that's been very public, both of those things. But you look at Memo, I don't even know if he's graduated from Texas A&M, as he says. He won't tweet his degree. And for a guy to start out that early without being established in his career, to just go straight to the juicing, and then now to say, well, I've changed philosophies from 2009 to 2011, and I'm playing, you know what I mean? Like, it all doesn't really match up.
It doesn't match up. I mean, the whole, the you know, showing his diploma and all that, I'm not really holding that to him, because, I mean, I don't think I would hold up my high school diploma because I don't have one. But
your college degree, that's what you're saying.
Well, college degree, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? You kind of got to give that.
Though. It should be pretty simple. I mean,
it should be pretty simple.
He's making it a bone of contention that I have no credibility because I don't have a degree. You know, go back to drama. All that stuff is just kind of stupid child stuff. And you look at it, and he looks at Victor, and it's funny. He keeps saying Victor's jealous of him, or, you know, Victor's a liar, this and that. I mean, like I said, I've spent time with the guy, and I know the guy pretty well. He's very wealthy man. He's a very successful person. Has been through different careers, always successful. It just seems kind of strange. It's like, you know, when Victor's credentials speak for themselves, my work speaks for itself. Memo can't even print a simple degree, just to show that credential. I mean, the rest of it is all out there in the New York Times and many other, you know, much more reputable media venues. I showed you this the other night, a minute-by-minute account of his testimony by one media site. Those are the credentials. I'm not seeing a degree or any of the other excellence. No doubt he seems intelligent, but very misinformed. You know, like he was talking about and I'm pulling up this schedule. He was talking on Twitter the other day. This is just one example of bad information. How Victor uses those hypoxic masks. Victor does hypoxic training with a hypoxicator, with an actual device from Hypoxico, the company that makes it. But it is not the same as one of those. I don't know if you've seen him in the gym, those guys that wear like the portable mask over their face. Looks like a gas mask, and it's got a filter on it, and they call it like hypoxic training. But you can buy it for like $89. Those are actually really cheap, and they're kind of dangerous because if you don't change the filters on them, you're just going to be breathing in like a lot of carbon dioxide, like a lot of bad air. Whereas the hypoxicator is a much more complicated $8,000 device. I'm actually working on a video right now. I went up and filmed a bunch of their new hypoxic training techniques up there with Angulo and Remy Korchemny on the track. So I'll have much of that. Unlike Memo, I'm actually informed. I've actually seen these new practices that Victor's been doing is kind of the point. So those guys that follow him on Twitter and hang on his every word and are convinced that there's some mystery contract between Conte and Berto or his fighters, they're just misinformed. And, you know, if you follow me, like one guy today, and then you're going on Memo's thing and starting to believe all the things and you're questioning me, and just unfollow me right now. Don't inundate me with stupid-ass questions because I'm just not going to bother answering them. Saturday night, there's really only one big fight as far as I'm concerned. You've got Delvin Rodriguez versus Freddie Hernandez on Friday night. ESPN2's Friday night fights. But really, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Saturday, May 25th at the O2 Arena in London, England, on HBO and Sky Box Office, Carl the Cobra Frotch versus Mikkel the Viking Kessler. Rematch, super middleweight. rounds for the IBF and WBA titles. Tony Bellew and Isaac Chalemba in a rematch that's going to be awesome is in support, as well as George Groves versus the always dangerous Tom Bob Anderson. I got Mikkel Kessler. We broke it down on the show and we got like 6 minutes. So
I got Prach. You know, I think
I don't know how.
I see a stoppage in the late rounds. I'm going to go with stoppage.
I would say that's a really likely scenario. Like, of all the different ways it could go, I could see that. I could
see him getting outboxed, really honestly, for 4 or 5, maybe even 6 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the mid-crisis is going to be in the middle of the rounds. He's going to sit there in his stool and go, I'm getting my ass outboxed. I need to do something. Mm-hmm. And that's when we're going to see the Cobra come out. Because he's going to look over and look at his lovely girlfriend, and she's going to have that sourpuss face look at him like, dude, you're not getting any tonight.
Yeah.
You know, he's just not performing, buddy.
You want to know who won the first fight? Look at her face after the 12th round.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's what I'm saying. So I'm going to go I'm going late stoppage. Carl Frotz, Devin Rodriguez against Freddie Hernandez. I'm going to go with Devin Rodriguez. Because even though I like Freddy Hernandez's acting career, which is another actor, his name is Freddy Hernandez as well.
That's funny.
But no, I'm going to go with Devin Rodriguez. I think Friday Night Fights. I think he's going to do his thing, and I even see a stoppage for him. He's just a bigger guy.
You know, as much as I break down Kessler and lean towards him and like really look at everything he's doing, I it's a bad sign for my pick that I can't tell you how he's going to win. Because I don't feel confident saying, oh, he's going to knock down Carl Barber.
Every time you talk
him out.
Dave throws you something out there that you go like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about that.
Like, you know, I mean, and you just look at the whole thing. Every time he's traveled, he's lost. Frotch never lost at home.
Right.
I'm still going with Kessler. I just like him, you know. He's like the Red Baron, you know.
Yeah. All I gotta say is that Carl Frotch, if you want to put another tattoo on Kessler, you got to be in close.
Yeah. And I just think, is the universe that cruel? Because he was saying, like, this is it. This is my big fight. This is my big moment. I get to show that I'm the better man, that what happened that night wasn't right. I'm telling you, I watched that fight, and he didn't win it.
No.
And he didn't really do a lot. I mean, he came on late, but that was, you know, it was like Kessler ran the race out front all race long, and then for, like, the last 3 laps, because, you know, it takes more energy to lead than the
he
trail.
Was, yeah.
He got kind of overtaken almost. And maybe
he
that's
was
what's
more
gonna
Robin.
Happen this time.
He was more Robin in that fight. He needs to be more Hood.
At the Estadio in Luna Park in Buenos Aires, Argentina, Tyke Sports, Omar Narvaez versus Felipe Urakuta, super flyweights, 12 rounds for Narvaez's WBO title. And this schedule is courtesy of badlefthook.com, maxboxing.com, which I used to use, will be up shortly. And Juan Carlos Sanchez Jr. versus Roberto Domingo Sosa, super flyweights, 12 rounds for Sanchez's IBF title. And Dave, that's your weekend fight schedule. I got no picks there. I know you're starving. I have bourbon to drink. So, my friend, we will call it quits.
We will call it quits here on Leaving the Ring. Catch us next week on Thursday, same time, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern time, with the two most hated boxing radio hosts on the airwaves. Anyways, everybody, don't drink and drive because you might spill your beer. Enjoy your weekend. Oh, really quick, big shout out to my son. He's graduating his 8th grade, going moving on to high school, and really proud of you, son, and I love you.
That's funny. I heard a joke the other day. It was like how 8th graders like the worst kids in the world. It was like a former teacher. So the best thing about them, though, is that they're top dog right now, but then next year it just starts all over again, right back to the bottom in 9th grade. It's always brutal. Like, you're on top for just like a minute, and then it starts all over again.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exciting, man. That's, you know, kids, better you than me. But, Dave, fun show as always, and I'll see you next week.
Next
Peace.
Week.